I want to let everybody know that we are withdrawing agenda item number 11. So that one will not be taken up today. So, without further ado, I will look to Madam Clerk, call the roll, please.
Supervisors Harris?
Here.
Smith?
Here.
Johnson?
Here.
Wyshon?
Here.
Broderick?
Here.
Sanfilippo?
Here.
Mr. Chair?
Here.
There are 7 members present. We have a quorum.
Thank you. And before we get into our agenda, I'm going to ask Corporation Counsel, and I've asked, we've got about 10 to 12 attorneys in the Corporation Counsel stable, if you will, and we've had a lot of changes as far as who's who and that kind of thing. And so over the course of the next 3 or 4 meetings, I'm going to ask either Mark or Kimberly to introduce 2 or 3 of the attorneys so that we could meet them face-to-face, know who they are. I know that today we have some recommendations from these attorneys, but Mr. Grady, if you could ask the attorneys that are here to come forward, please.
Thanks. Good morning, Mr. Chair, Committee. Today we have with us Molly Zillick, Lee Jones, and Roy Williams. I believe a couple of them have items before you later today, but they'll spend the next few minutes just introducing themselves and telling you a little bit about them.
I'm Molly Zillick. I've been working in the Corporation Counsel's office for a little over 5 years. I do a lot of HR work and discrimination, employment discrimination cases. Employee relations work, I staff the personal review board, civil service commission, do a lot of inmate pro se cases and just any litigation that comes into publication.
Very good. Nice to have you back.
Thank you.
The gentleman in the middle.
Thank you. I'm Lee Jones. I've been with Corp Counsel since December 2006.
Oh.
So I used to do a lot of mental health cases. Started recently in the last few months or so doing a lot of the PRB, some of the PRB, some of the civil litigation, employment matters, contract matters. I'm sure I'll be down for you all.
Very good. And is your school, was it Loyola? Who went to Loyola? Oh, you did. Okay.
Yep.
All right. Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thanks. Roy Williams, we do some of the same work. I handle civil litigation in state and federal court, as well as a number of contract matters and real estate matters that have come to several of us because of retirements that happened last year. I also represent the sheriff's office in the grievance arbitration filed by the deputies.
And how long have you been with us?
Been there since August 1st, 2005.
Ah, okay. Well, very good. I don't know if any committee members had any specific questions. Mark, it looks like you.
I just wanted to add one thing. All of our attorneys, we believe, are good attorneys. But Lee Jones is a little bit special. Mr. Jones is with the Navy, and he spent approximately 8 months, I think, in Iraq about 2 years ago doing detainee issues, and he's about to leave again. And assuming his security clearance was in July to work on detainee issues at Guantanamo.
Wow.
So he'll be gone from us for a while, but we're glad for our country that he does what he does. It's a little hard for us to lose him.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thank all of you for coming down. It's good to meet everybody face-to-face, and good luck for your service to our country. Appreciate that. So,
thank you.
If nothing else, we'll go to item number 1, please.
Item number 1 from the County Executive, appointing Jim Sullivan to the position of Director of Child Support Enforcement for Milwaukee County.
Ms. Torhorst, please.
Good morning, Chairman, Supervisors. It's a pleasure to be back before you again this cycle. The County Executive and all of our staff are very excited to work with you for the next 4 years. It's my pleasure today to be here to reappoint Jim Sullivan to the position of Director of Child Support Services for Milwaukee County. Mr. Sullivan has done an exemplary job, and since his recent appointment, he's been working very diligently to increase staff morale, increase collections for the Milwaukee County families that so readily rely on this service, as well as come up with innovative new ways to perform this function at the county. It's our pleasure to be appointing him, and we hope that we can garner your support for his confirmation here today. Mr. Sullivan is here to answer any questions you may have.
Mr. Sullivan.
Thank you very much.
Questions by committee members? Supervisor Johnson?
Mr. Chairman, I move approval.
Thank you.
I'm for it.
Okay. Any other comments, questions?
I'll just say,
yes,
Mr. Chairman,
yes,
that I do approve this, approve you being coming back. My words don't seem to come out right today. However, I just wanted to say that I do appreciate the work that you have done so far. I think you and I have worked well together, and so I'm really glad to see you come back for another 4 years.
Thank you very much, Supervisor. Yeah.
Appointment is the word.
Mr. Sullivan, were you able to reach all the committee members to see if they had any questions?
I had the opportunity to speak to you, Supervisor Borkowski, and Supervisor Harris as well. Tried to get in touch with everybody, and I know everybody's schedule is very busy. Wanted to make myself available to the members, the committee members, members of the committee. But that's, of course, not just today and this week. That's a constant thing. And one thing that I think is important about child support is not just the fact that we serve people in every one of the supervisory districts, but also, of course, that means that all of you have constituents, both custodial parents and non-custodial parents, who may from time to time need an advocate in the child support system, and I'm always available to help with that.
Well, besides wishing you and your staff good wishes, as I mentioned, maybe 4 to 6 months from now, while this committee kind of, in particular me, gets its acts together, I would like to have you come back and share some of the positive work out of your shop. I know the fatherhood initiatives, there's some good things that are going on, and too often I think we get bogged down, not only this committee, but this county government in general, with negativity. And there is a lot of good stuff going on, and I would like to use this committee to showcase a lot of stuff. So plan on that 4 to 6 months from now, okay?
Certainly will. Thank you, Supervisor.
If there's no further questions, Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
Supervisor Harris?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Weishan?
Aye.
Broderick?
Aye.
Sanfilippo?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
7 ayes, 0 noes. The item is approved.
Thank you very much, Madam Clerk. Item number 2, please.
Item number 2, a resolution ordinance by Supervisors Cullen, Johnson, Borkowski, Broderick, Jurczyk, Dmitrievich, Romo West, Haas, Lipscomb, Schmidt, Taylor, Sanfilippo, Harris, Alexander, Stamper, and Bowen, to merge the committees on finance and audit and personnel into a 9-member standing committee with 2 co-chairpersons to improve the efficiency of legislative oversight and to amend chapters 1, 17, 32, 33, 46, 56, 57, 73, 79, 80, 201, and 203 of the Milwaukee County General Ordinances to reflect this change.
Very good. And we welcome our new County Board Chairwoman, Marie Dmitrievich, and brand new Supervisor David Cullen, who's not new to government. And why don't I look to both of you first to maybe talk about the genesis of this whole thing, and then we'll walk through and go for committee questions if there are any.
Sure. Well, I'll start. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Nice to be able to call you Mr. Chairman. And I appreciate you scheduling this and hearing this in such a timely manner. And all the supervisors who have co-sponsored, I think that's great. And the clerk read the list, so I won't need to do that. But in working with the chairwoman, we thought, and she thought, it was her idea, that with the approval of the county board, this ordinance change will really streamline our process. Right now, there are certain legislative matters, including position abolish creates employee fringe benefits, collective bargaining agreements that require dual referrals to both the Personnel Committee and the Finance and Audit Committee. Combining these committees into one, I think, will save time, staff time. It may result in potential cost savings down the road. We won't have to bring in our experts, more than once, actuaries and attorneys. And if this is adopted, the Committee on Finance, Personnel, and Audit will be a 9-member committee comprised of the current membership of both of the standing committees as now created, and it will really be a balanced committee with new people, people with a lot of experience, various backgrounds of experience. And I know the chairwoman has some testimonies.
Yes. Good morning. Thank you. I apologize for my stuffiness. It's getting over a cold here. But the combined committee will be led by two co-chairs, and you all heard already we have Supervisors Willie Johnson Jr. and David Cullen. The proposed ordinance change truly is a hybrid approach that incorporates best practices already used by other legislative branches in the City of Milwaukee and the State of Wisconsin. From a policy perspective, the City of Milwaukee combines both fiscal and employee matters under the umbrella of one standing committee. The Finance and Personnel Committee, locally and nationally, this is the model known and trusted. From an organizational perspective, a number of committees in the Wisconsin State Legislature have co-chairs. The most relevant examples here probably are the Joint Committee on Employment Relations, Joint Committee on Finance, and the Joint Committee on Audit. The experience that Supervisor Cullen brings to the table from his public service with the state will be an added value. Many of their operational processes will be used by this new combined committee. For example, one cycle, Supervisor Willie Johnson will chair the meeting, and the next cycle, Supervisor Cullen will chair the meeting. Hopefully you've had an opportunity to review the proposed Committee on Finance, Personnel, and Audit Operating Procedures. That should be in your packet per the suggestion of your great chairman, Mark Borkowski. Used wisely and appropriately, these administrative tools will help ensure an efficient and timely committee meeting process that maintains public and departmental participation. As chairwoman, I'm committed to making this process work. Supervisors deserve and need time to make good policy decisions.
And I've spoken with Supervisor Johnson about this, and we're both pretty firm that all the agenda, the materials for the committee will be made available at least 5 days prior to the meeting date, so people will have ample time to review it and go to talk to department heads and others if they have questions. And I think this will reduce the amount of time the committee will be meeting. I know that's been a concern that the committee meetings might last a long time. The committee's agenda will have approximate times for its major sections, so people will have some idea as to when they should come. And I've in the past in the legislature, when I've chaired committees, made real efforts to sort of stay on task after it's, you know, raised by a German mother. Being on time, keeping things moving has always been something that she imparted to me. And I think that, you know, Supervisor Johnson could do the same thing. There's also, I know, talk of a vice chair, Mr. Chairman, and I think that the vice chair could really help with the operation of the committee, the timekeeping and things like that, and help in keeping us moving. And our plan is, if the meetings go long, is to have a designated lunch period so that there will be a break. Everybody will be able to stop, get something to eat, come back in the afternoon, so that agenda items at the end aren't given short shrift. And it's really, it's talking to the chairwoman, this is really designed to streamline the process, and there's been streamlining in the past. Doing some research, I think it was in 1996, the county board reduced the number of committees from 13 to 8. So this is a little bit different. I think the chairwoman has come in and said, you know, she wants to continue streamlining and make this, you know, efficient body, and this is one way that she can do it. I'm willing to answer any questions. I'm sure the chairwoman is answering any questions that anybody might have.
At this time, I pass the gavel to Vice Chairwoman Supervisor Harris.
Thank you, and I believe Schmidt has a question.
Thank you.
Really not so much of a question. I certainly, you know, read through this, and my perspective, a number of years on both finance and personnel, I was the only member this last term, last couple of years, to be on both finance and personnel continuously. Anyway, it's pretty obvious, and I think all the things you said rang true. I certainly sat down and talked with the chairwoman, because all of us had a chance to do it. But this was a real topic of importance and concern to me, too. It had to be on the committee. But there's so much overlap in these two committees going through the agendas, and sitting through long finance meetings and having the same people come up the next day and go through this laboriously once again when I spent a couple hours on the day before. Everyone everyone out there, as time is valuable, if we can cut into that time and have a situation where they're not spending 2 days in a row sitting here for 4 or 5 hours. I mean, it's a technical, quite long, especially when you get into contracts and you get into closed sessions. So there could be some long meetings, I understand that. But I think along with that, and you spoke to all these points already, that we need to stay a little better on task. We need to get stuff out ahead of time. We need department chairs contacting the people on the committee so we're not asking questions that can't be answered beforehand. And I think with more organization, new dedication, and people being here to work, and the chairman being available all the time to take our questions will help a lot. So I'm much encouraged by this. I think it's a pretty formidable assignment. But at the same time, I mean, for all these reasons we've been through, there's no reason we should go through this 2 days in a row. And if you look at it, a large portion of anything we really would discuss in some depth has been on both committees, both finance and audit, back-to-back committees. So I'm happy, you know, for that situation, because I don't think that was a good situation for a long time. So this is the way, and when we did downsize or do those committee stuff, I was not for that long, but the audit was put with finance. And this makes good sense because we're talking about contracts, and we're talking about finance has to be involved, and so this all makes good sense. And I think almost the entire board is supportive, not everyone. So I'm going to move approval.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair, thank you. Supervisor Schmidt was rather eloquent as far as the reasoning behind this. I would like to offer an amendment, and I trust that all of you have gotten a copy of this. I'm going to look to the clerk to read the amendment, please. And
amend lines 24 through 33 as follows. Whereas the merger of the committees on finance and audit and personnel into one committee on finance, personnel, and audit with 9 members rather than 7 and 2 co-chairpersons and 1 vice chairperson would preserve the legislative body's ability to thoroughly review important policy matters that impact county operations and promote legislative efficiencies for staff. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the County Board of Supervisors approves the merger of the committees on finance and audit and personnel into one committee with 9 members and 2 co-chairpersons and 1 vice chairperson entitled the Committee on Finance, Personnel, and Audit, which shall be responsible for all the policy matters previously handled by each, and to amend lines 110 through 121 as follows. The chairperson of the board shall make written announcements of his or her appointments to said committees and shall designate a chairperson and vice chairperson of each said committees, except for the Committee on Finance, Personnel, and Audit, which shall have 2 co-chairpersons and 1 vice chairperson. The order of the member's name in the chairperson's written announcement of appointment shall denote seniority on the county board. In case of a vacancy in any committee, the same shall be filled by written appointments by the chairperson of the board. The chairperson of the board may, at his or her discretion, change the composition of said committees, including the designation of the chairperson or co-chairpersons and vice chairperson. In the event of a vacancy in the office of the county board chairperson and a successor is elected, such successor may, after his or her election and in the manner herein above provided, make any changes in committee appointments.
Are there any questions on the amendment?
Okay,
Supervisor Borkowski.
Before I move approval of the amendment, I want to look to Attorney Grady. I know that there's been some discussion. Again, we're kind of feeling our way through this with an elongated committee with co-chairs and now this vice chair, which is a possible problem as far as having too many supervisors in a meeting. Could you, as for like agenda setting, for instance, could you maybe just elaborate a little bit as to how we need to make sure that we're not violating any kind of open meetings laws?
Mr. Chairman, our office needs to, we've started to have a little discussion about agenda setting. First of all, let me say there's no reason you can't adopt this. You can have as many vice chairs as you want to have. The issue arises in agenda setting. How many supervisors can attend an agenda setting? And there's at least some concern that 3 might be too many. And so we really need to think about this a little bit more in terms of our office and advising you. But if you do have 2 co-chairs and a vice chair, it may, in a situation situation where all three of them would not be able to attend an agenda session. They might have the alternate co-chair or vice chair wouldn't attend the agenda session, just the chair is co-chair. So that's an issue that doesn't prevent you from adopting this, but might dictate how you handle the agenda session.
Thank you.
Okay. Supervisor Schmidt?
Not to complicate a corporation council, sir, but now I'm not. But I thought it was always a, you know, minority of a committee, and now we got nine, so why is it three? I don't understand. Excuse me.
Thank you. I'm sure.
To be at least four? That's fine.
That's the uncertainty right now, in my mind, at least in our mind. There is at least an argument that a nine-member committee, five members constitutes a quorum.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have five members show up at a committee meeting, they can't run a committee meeting. If you have three of those five members meeting together, those three are enough to control that meeting about five.
Oh.
Interesting. Yes, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Yeah, I had a similar question on that. I think, and thank you for saying that this is just advice that we can use, but we can, of course, it's very easy to go forward on this. My question, this is something we're evaluating right now, too, because it came up with our new supervisors. They've been interested in going to agenda settings and learning, which I think is great. But one other way around it, if this does happen to be a hurdle, we'll just have to publicly notice it. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, that we could still go ahead and do it. It would just need to be publicly noticed. I just wanted to find out if that was correct, Madam Chair.
Okay. Yes, go ahead.
Certainly can publicly notice for agenda setting meetings as many supervisors as want to come. There's some, I think, tension between the purpose of an agenda setting meeting and public notice.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Okay. Yes, Supervisor. Any other supervisors want to speak? Supervisor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to move approval of the amendment. I want to just compliment our new chairwoman. This is a great idea. I know that Supervisor Schmidt has already talked about efficiencies. I think many of us, all of us that have been on either one or the other committee, and recognizing all of the staff that's in attendance and the time, while it's nice to have them here, I don't know how productive they are. So I think this is clearly, from an efficiency standpoint, wonderful. The other thing is that there will be for sure designated lunch periods because both those committees always seem to go long, and it's not fair to the clerk and staff and others to not be able to at least get something to eat or whatever. So I'm making the motion for approval of the amendment, Madam Chair.
All right, we have a motion to approve the amendment. Call the roll.
Supervisor Schmidt made a motion.
Originally. I can draw that for.
Okay, I'm sorry.
That's Pam's my mistake. Thank you.
Totally missed it. Okay.
This is just the
amendment.
Just the amendment, right.
Okay. On the amendment, Supervisor Harris.
Can you repeat the amendment for us, please? Or the motion?
The motion is to approve the amendment.
Okay. Thank you.
Supervisor Schmidt. Johnson?
Aye.
Weishan?
No.
Broderick?
Aye.
Sanfilippo?
Aye.
Harris?
Aye.
Mr. Scherer?
Aye.
Six ayes, one no.
As amended, I would move, please.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'd like to speak on that item as a whole now.
All right. Supervisor Weishan?
Thank you, Madam Chair. From the looks of the co-sponsors, I guess I'm one of the few that I guess disagrees with this, because honestly, I don't see there being the efficiencies in this. And in fact, I don't think it's a very well thought out proposal, and I see it as more of a consolidation of power than it is anything to make it an efficient corporate decision. And in fact, if you take the time to look at some of the corporate literature that's out there on how we should construct a board to run a $1.2 billion multi-faceted corporation, they're actually going to the trends of separating out and diluting their Finance Committee, because of all of the bad things that have happened over the last 15 to 20 years with excessive pay packages and things like that, where they're carving out the audit functions rather than combining it. I think that with Act 10 and the changes on the personnel side, that we will look at the Personnel Committee in and of itself will have a huge agenda. There are lots of issues. And I think this does not look well for our employees overall, for the 5,300 active employees that we have. Believe me, when it comes to the finance agenda, your issues will definitely fall to the bottom. And you know, I know people will make all kinds of promises now, but honestly, after you've sat in a committee meeting for 4, 5, 6 hours, the last thing you really want to do is discuss the merits of the pay structure of some smaller entity in county government. And I believe that that will be given short shrift. Also, I think it radically changes the power structure here in county government. For the 12 years I've been here and the 4 years prior to that, you see the changes where we've loosened the grip of committee chairs on setting the agenda and putting things before the county board, where you have a corp counsel opinion that goes back to say if there is a negative recommendation, it still goes to the full county board, where when you look at past county history, was that if it failed in committee, it didn't go forward. You look at the changes from 96, the reduction of 13 down to the 8 standing committees. A lot of people said that was political suicide, because at the time we had 25 county board members. You needed 13 votes to become chair of the county board. And so you had a chairmanship to give. That was reduced, and what you saw was with the loosening of the grip of committee chairmanships and then the reduction of those chairmanships, you created a more egalitarian county board where county supervisors could have more of a direct impact, whether you were a chairman or even on a specific committee. If this was a true consolidation, you would just keep 7 members on the finance committee, and you wouldn't need the co-chairs if it was a true reduction and efficiency. What this is actually turning back the clock, and you're going to see 9 members on the finance committee, co-chairs, 2 chairmanships. And isn't it just remarkable that you also need 9 people to vote for you and your own vote to get 10 votes to become chair of the county board? So this is actually a step backwards in the power structure. And I have huge misgivings about creating any committee that has 50% of our board on it. That is a huge problem, because supervisors need to have the ability to go into a committee, and then if you get new information by the time board time comes, you can adjust your vote if necessary. I don't see that as this being a setup for that possibility. You will have 50% of the board already committing to one position. And I just think that this, in the long run, will be a disaster. And I can tell you I'm very disappointed in our new people on the county board, that they have not even been here through an entire cycle, yet they want to come in here and tell me that everything that I've done for the last 12 years has been wrong and inefficient. And honestly, if you're looking at the state of Wisconsin as an example of efficiency, that's a big mistake. And if you want to look at the city of Milwaukee, you know, these are people who have trouble picking up the garbage and plowing the city streets, yet they want to tell me that this is the correct way to structure government. So I just think that this is a major step backwards for what we've tried to accomplish literally over the last 16 years. And I would hope that, you know, unfortunately, you know, I see where the votes are and the co-sponsors, but I just wish we would have took more time. And just the one last point, maybe the chairperson can address this, and that is we all do a candidacy statement when you run for county board chair, and there's 3 simple things that are in them. And it's, what is your commitment to the job? What is your agenda? Major policy initiatives you want to achieve? And how are you going to do committee assignments? The fact is, you can go read back, and over the last, you know, it's only been a few weeks, There was nothing in those candidacy statements by any candidate that said we were going to radically change the committee structure of Milwaukee County and radically change the power dynamic of this county board. And I think that is very Walker-esque and very disingenuous to people who may have supported a person thinking that, I'm tired of manhole covers falling out of the sky and bombs being dropped on people. These are issues, if it was that important, it should have been discussed in the efforts of a campaign, and everybody who voted for chairman should have known these things prior, because you know what? That's a simple thing called the county ordinance and complying with that county ordinance. So I'd like to hear a response. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Weishaupt. I know Supervisor Johnson would like to speak. Do you mind if I allow the chair to address the questions that were posed?
I don't feel the need to respond to those questions at this time. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Yep, you're welcome. All right, Supervisor Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With respect to personnel matters, that was my main concern as when I first heard about this, that enough time be given to department people, to individuals if they have issues with respect to positions. That was my first concern. As it relates to votes, I don't envision that there will be a lot of 9-0 votes. I think that the supervisors will vote according to how they feel about the particular item that's in front of them. And if nothing else, if this thing doesn't work, if we see that it comes unwieldy, then we can adjust. And I think that's something that's been, I think we've come to that conclusion. If it doesn't work, then we can make adjustments. So.
Thank you, Supervisor Johnson. We have a question from our chairman over here, Supervisor Borkowski, and then after Supervisor Borkowski, Supervisor Jurczyk wants to speak. All right.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Supervisor Johnson stole my thunder just a little bit. I want to compliment Supervisor Weishaupt. Actually, I had thought of some of the things that he mentioned publicly, which are legitimate. They are legitimate. Like I said, when you sit in a personnel committee meeting for 5-6 hours and you have staff that is also in attendance, the fact that we're going to put times on these so that people can come and know when approximately they're going to be on is very important from a productivity standpoint. The other thing, and where Supervisor Johnson stole my thunder, is that I have to believe, that this brand new term, brand new chairwoman, if it's not working, okay, I'd like to think that we can all kind of, come to the office and say, hey, it's out of control, it's unwieldy, we learned our lesson, and we're gonna go back to the way it's been. So. I say let's go for it. Let's see how it works. If it doesn't, you know what? It's not like this is the way it's got to be forever. So, but I am intrigued by some of the comments because I actually hadn't thought of those. So, thank you, Madam Chair.
Supervisor Jurczyk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to respond. I am one of the co-sponsors, and I thought very long and hard about. The structure that the chairwoman was putting in place. And I disagree with Supervisor Weishaupt indicating that no candidates came forward with the suggested change. One of my big concerns, and strongly expressed on the board floor, was the whole issue regarding final offers and how a very minority portion of the board could have real impact with regard to final offers by unions. This may not have been the solution that I was originally looking at, but I think it vastly improves our prior practice. We will now have a 9-member co-finance personnel committee looking at final offers and having a real opportunity to look at the contract language, the personnel issue with regard to the overall structure of the county government, and also the finance issue. And I think this is a good committee to really have an opportunity to look at final offers. I still think we should define the term bargaining team, and I am appointed to this committee, and I will work with the committee to try to get bargaining team defined correctly so we don't have the kind of problems that we had in the past. But I think this structure vastly improves what we previously had. And I totally agree with Supervisor Schmidt. When you have people like Buck Consulting and Corp Counsel and outside counsel often who advise this board on significant issues with regard to contract offers and final offers, the fact that they don't have to sit through two very lengthy days of meetings is a vast improvement on not only the use of our advisors' time, but tremendous savings to the board, because we're not going to be paying these people twice. We may be able to cut those costs in half because of this. So I disagree that someone hadn't raised some concerns. I give the chairwoman credit for moving forward with a solution to some of these problems, and I am a very strong supporter of this. I hope this committee passes this. I appreciate the amendment by the chairman. I think it was a good amendment. Thank you.
Supervisor Weishan.
Hi. Thank you. Just one last piece about this. We've always had the ability, and always have in the past, had joint meetings of personnel, finance, or any other committee when the issue so arose. And you do have the power of the committee of the whole. If there was an issue of such importance that everyone on the county board needed to be there, we would simply call a meeting of the whole. So once again, I think these claims of so-called cost savings are erroneous, and that what is true intent of this? Because if your point is you just want to have a consultant in to give a report, you simply call a joint meeting of both personnel and finance, and you then have the opportunity for supervisors of all stripes to come in and say something. And like I said, I don't think people have actually thought through the process of what five votes does, what four votes does, compared to the old system of three and four and different makeups of these committees. And I think, like I said, anytime you have 50% of any governing body on one board, you are simply making it a situation of the haves and the have-nots. You will see, and believe me, when the dollars are tight, you're going to see people segregate themselves into the group that gets something and the group that doesn't. And I don't think that is a very good structure for us to go to. And, you know, everybody says we're going to change it in the future. Well, I believe that, but I don't, you know, I really don't honestly believe that's a bit of the rose-colored glasses on that. Thank you very much. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Supervisor Weiss. And Supervisor Schmidt?
Thank you. Just a brief comment. I guess I will certainly stand by all of the comments I made before, and I won't repeat those. I think we've been through that. The other thing is that we have kind of a committee of the whole during the budget process, which is so important, so all supervisors can come. I would hope this new board would be more engaged and would be coming to these meetings, personnel and finance too. I think it makes good sense for all we do. I think we all have some of the concerns Supervisor Weishan talks about. I'm not naive about these things. I came from a situation here. I'm on the committee, and I guess I'm not the majority. I'm going to have a chair or a vice chair, but it's the point is we represent our constituencies. I think maybe we need to look at to make sure we have a balance and have some suburban interest. But you know what? This is a Milwaukee-based county board. It's our largest municipality. Preponderance of votes and ideas are going to be there, and that's the way it is. But we all have our say. No matter what position we have, we represent our constituents. We have a chance to have input. There's no guarantee. I'm going along with everything the quote majority of the Finance Committee might want. The chairwoman knows that. She appreciates that role I will have, and that's the role we all can have. We don't have to go with the majority if it doesn't feel that our constituents are being represented. I want to make sure that my constituents are represented, and I appreciate being on the committee again, which I've had a chance to be in the past. And people can take part. I think we have an opportunity to come to those meetings. There's a lot. When you talk about half, if you sit in on finance and personnel, you'll be pretty prepared for our general meeting that comes up in a couple of weeks, because I always save all my stuff, and there's so many issues that are in those two committees. Not downplaying any of the other committees. They all have their roles, of course. There's no question about that. But if you're very prepared, if you follow along very closely on what's going on in personnel and finance, and everybody has the opportunity to do that, whether you're on the committee or not. And I hope you would take that so everybody can have their say, and that you represent your constituents. You need to take a more active role in that to make sure that's heard. And I think that this is an opportunity to do that. It makes good sense for all the reasons we talked about. And not going to be a broken record, but if it proves to be unwieldy, then we'll have to make some adjustments. But this is an idea worth trying. It certainly is for all the reasons we've talked about. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any other questions?
Sir, could I just make one brief comment?
Yeah.
I just, you know, wanted to relay some of the fears of Supervisor Weishan, and I appreciate Supervisor Schmidt's comments that, you know, I'm in the legislature, served as the chair of a committee as a Democrat, always listened to Republicans. You know, there's been kind of a trend lately in the legislature to be a little hyper-partisan, you may have noticed. And I think it's been a bad trend. So if there are people who disagree with myself on the committee, I think it's important that we all sit down, and I think this group is a more collegial body, and that we all have some of the same interests at heart. So, you know, my intention, and I'm certain Supervisor Johnson's intention, isn't going to be, well, let's just get five votes on the committee and ramp something through, and not listen to people who might have an alternative opinion. And let's try to work things out and do things in the right way. So, you know, I know I come from a little bit of a different world where we had committee meetings that sometimes would last 10 or 12 hours with no breaks. So, and that wasn't the model of efficiency always. But it's, you know, the way things got done. So, you know, I'm used to sitting in the chair for a long time, if need be, and I think others are too. So I think that, as Supervisor Schmidt said, I think this is an idea that we should try. I applaud the chairwoman for, you know, putting her stamp on saying, let's do something and be more efficient. And we've all got to hear Supervisor Weishan's concerns, and, you know, we'll have those in our mind as we move forward with this. And if things aren't working, we can always try to fix them.
All right, thank you for your comments. If there are no further questions or comments, I ask the clerk to call the roll on the motion to approve as amended.
Supervisor Sporkowski?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Weishan?
No.
Broderick?
Aye.
Sanfilippo?
Aye.
Madam Chair?
Aye.
Six ayes, one no.
Thank you, everybody.
Okay. Madam Clerk, item number three.
Item number three, a resolution by Supervisors Romo West, Stamper, and Dmitrievich establishing Milwaukee County policy with respect to honoring detainer requests from the United States Department of Homeland Security, Immigration, and Customs Enforcement.
Well, we welcome our first Vice Chairman, Supervisor Peggy Romo West. Supervisor Romo West, the floor is yours.
Thank you. It's always good to be here. It's good to see you, Mr. Chairman, this morning and this honorable body. This morning I am here to discuss with you an item that is not only a sign of the times, but also a means by which Milwaukee County Sheriff's Department may be able to benefit financially. As most of you are aware, in the 2012 budget, the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Department took about approximately $14 million cut to its budget. As a result of that, we have been notified as a board that there may not be or will not be a parks patrol, a TEU. Supervisor Weishan just prepared a letter that most of us signed and sent to the sheriff's office. The sheriff does have some serious budget issues. Beyond that, there are other counties, our friends to the north, Cook County, under the authorship of Jesus Garcia, commissioner there, as well as Santa Clara, California, and several counties in New Mexico have decided that they will not honor ICE detainers. In fact, there is legislation AD 1081, which is currently in the Assembly in California, being sponsored by State Representative Tom Amiano, that will effectively end California's relationship with ICE as it pertains to ICE detainers unless they are serious or violent felonies. As you'll notice, the resolution before you I have expanded that. I want to just briefly explain to you what an ICE detainer does. An immigration ICE detainer is a tool used by ICE and other Department of Homeland Security, DHS officials, to identify potentially deportable individuals who are housed in jails or prisons nationwide. An immigration detainer is an official request from the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, to another law enforcement agency, such as the state or local jail, that the local law enforcement agency notify ICE prior to releasing an individual from local custody so that ICE can arrange to take over custody. Detainers are requests. They're not commands. They are not arrest warrants, and they do not provide probable cause for arrest. The presence of a detainer is not indicative of an individual's immigration status. Detainers do not begin deportation proceedings and do not signify whether a person will or will not be deported. Thus, detainers are different from a notice to appear or an NTA, which is an official civil/immigration filing that commences a removal proceeding against an individual. An immigration detainer document merely states that investigation has been initiated to determine whether this person is subject to removal from the United States. An authorized immigration official or local police officer designated to act as an immigration official through the 287 program can issue a detainer to any other federal, state, or local law enforcement agency. So this is a means by which you identify people that you believe to be in this country illegally. It is not a warrant. It is not something that is mandatory. What happens many times with detainers is that this is cause for a person to not be able to bond or bail themselves out of jail, which means we are holding on to them for a longer period of time than we need to. In addition, the ICE detainer allows for us to hold on to an individual for 48 hours longer than their sentence. And so, what happens is, again, we end up housing people that we are not being fully reimbursed for, and we're putting people in a situation where, as you and I may be able to bond out, they're not able to. And again, this is not solely happening to people who are in this country who are undocumented, and B, this is not happening as within the ICE parameters to just criminal. People identified as criminal aliens. And you have to forgive me because I really don't like using the terms illegal or criminal, so that's why I'm wincing a little bit here at my words. The other thing is that this does not just affect people that are undocumented. This affects immigrants. And I'm not entirely sure because I haven't been able to get a clear answer from the Sheriff's Department as to how they identify people for a nice detainer. Many municipalities do what we would describe as racial profiling. If you have a last name that fits within a certain ethnic group, if you're asked a question upon arrest as whether or not you were born in this country, if you have an accent, some people go by the way that you look. And these are all methods that are currently being used to determine whether or not someone is a good candidate for an ICE detainer. In other bigger pictures, the use of detainers has been found to be unconstitutional. It's unconstitutional for two reasons. The first reason is because in several states they have found that it's an unconstitutional commandeering of local law enforcement, saying that ICE does not have the authority to come in and tell local municipalities like us how to use our resources. In another case, although people like to talk about the fact that someone who's here undocumented or without proper paperwork is not a U.S. citizen and therefore is not subject to the rights of our Constitution, but in the United States, you cannot hold people without probable cause. So what you have in front of you is you have a resolution that asks that we do not honor ICE detainers for people who are picked up for driving offenses, for people who are picked up for, you know, for misdemeanors other than, and you can read them there yourself, domestic violence offenses, drunk driving offenses, because I know we have had some situations with that here in Milwaukee County. And it, obviously, if they have, if they're being charged with a felony, we'll definitely hold on to them. And I just want to say again that this is counter to what some of our fellow counties have done. There are counties in the United States that do not honor ICE detainers at all. And so what I'm asking is not that we don't honor them at all, but that we honor them within certain parameters and allow for people who are, have not committed serious crimes to be able to be sent home. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I would like to move approval and be asked to be added as a co-sponsor. And I wanted to also say I do applaud Supervisor Roma West for presenting this resolution because I think it's important to Milwaukee County as a whole not to put ourselves in positions to be discriminatory against any individual that lives in our county. So thank you for this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, just a couple of years ago when I was on the Judiciary Committee, we had this topic come before us. And if my memory serves me correct, it's not the Sheriff's Department that decides who gets held on these detainers. The supervisor mentioned that, you know, some of the criteria used by the Sheriff's Department. So I was wondering if we could have somebody from the Sheriff's Department maybe come up and comment on this process and kind of make a clarification as to exactly how this is done, because if you're being given the illusion that this is a big problem, and every single person that comes in is detained unnecessarily. And from my recollection, from our prior testimony, that's not the case. I'd like to hear from the law enforcement professionals, none of which we are, although Jerry used to be the law. My concern always is that when you have those of us who are not professional law enforcement people making policy regarding law enforcement, you know, we do it for the wrong reasons. So what we want to do is we have an obligation to protect the citizens of this county, and I don't want to make decisions just based on something that may, you know, feel good as opposed to not being what's best.
I know Supervisor Weiss on your next, but can we allow?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay, thank you. Gentlemen, please, have a seat. Good to have you.
Sure.
And for the record, I think most of us know you, but...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Inspector Edward Bailey, on behalf of Sheriff Clark, I'm joined by one of my deputy inspectors from my Detention Services Bureau, Deputy Inspector Kevin Niklevich. I'll start my comments. I'll be appearing on, I think, several items today. Congratulations on your appointment as chair of this committee, Supervisor. And to the returning members and the new members, welcome. So, in response to the supervisor's statements, there are some parts that I'll just stipulate to as law enforcement. The concept that other counties in the United States have taken similar actions is true. We are familiar with that. San Francisco, California, Santa Clara, California. And I don't want to characterize it as only what's happening on our West Coast, but Supervisor Crepin, Cook County, Illinois, just to our south, has taken a similar step. So we are familiar with that. There is a issue of finance. My peer to my left will be able to talk about that particularly because there's some testimony that this is really a financial or budgetary matter. Supervisor noted the hit the Sheriff's Office budget took this year, which is certainly in the minds of many committee members as well. I think that's a fairly de minimis item as it relates to this. We do get reimbursement from Immigration and Customs Enforcement for the holding of people on their detainers once they've accepted custody of the inmate. That is to say that the hold is then based upon Immigration and Customs Enforcement accepting the inmate under their guidelines, and my peer will talk about that as needed. He has the numbers of both the numbers of inmates we're talking about and also the numbers of dollars that we're talking about. But more to the point, I think, of why I'm here is really this thought of what is a detainer. And it's really a cooperative agreement between law enforcement agencies. Immigration and Customs Enforcement is a law enforcement agency. It's a federal law enforcement agency. They do ask us to hold, as all other law enforcement agencies do, inmates while they conduct investigations. We get detainers from federal law enforcement agencies. We get detainers from the Milwaukee Police Department. We get detainers from the Bayside Police Department. There are controls in how long law enforcement may hold on a detainer. Within state jurisdictions, generally 48 hours. So there is a clock. There are controls on how long we can hold on a detainer. Once a federal agency accepts custody under their jurisdiction and authority, then in this case it would shift to the federal clock under what Immigration and Customs Enforcement is allowed to hold for. There are venues to challenge issues of constitutionality, issues of propriety, and the sheriff's position is, as it relates to federal law enforcement, the correct venue to challenge what Immigration and Customs Enforcement does is a committee of the United States Congress. And the venue to challenge the constitutionality of what they do is ultimately the United States Supreme Court. Now, there's a way to get there, starting at the local level. We envision a system in which we force brother and sister law enforcement agencies in interacting with each other to always run to a magistrate, run to a court, and get a writ issued, or a court order issued, or a warrant issued. And I'm not sure that that's a law enforcement practice that we want to enter into, when I think there are reasonable controls over how long a detainer can be in effect. I would also say that I often see people's eyes glaze over when I talk about the sheriff's constitutional authority. But on this point, it's not absolute, but it's one of the pillars of why we have sheriffs. The sheriff runs the county jail under his constitutional authority. He interacts with other law enforcement agencies under his constitutional authority. And finally, just one point about how the sheriff's office identifies inmates that may be ripe for detainers. The suggestion is that there's interaction between the sheriff's office and ICE, in which the sheriff's office is notifying ICE, we have this person in our custody, and they may be ripe for a detainer. That is not the case. We honor detainers sent to us by Immigration and Customs Enforcement. We do not suggest potential detainer subjects to Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Other than that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
I don't know if Deputy Inspector had anything to add. First of all, how's your brother doing?
He's doing wonderful.
Give him our best, please.
Yeah. I will do so, Supervisor. Thank you. Well, Mr. Sherman, Supervisors, good morning. In terms of the numbers, I will tell you that in 2010, there were 247 inmates that had ICE detainers. For 2011, there were 322 inmates that had ICE detainers. And in terms of reimbursement is recognized from the State Criminal Alien Assistance Program. It is SCAP. S-C-A-A-P, which is administered by the Bureau of Justice Assistance. And in terms of the dollar amounts of that reimbursement for Milwaukee County, in 2009, $135,373. In 2010, $131,250. And for 2011, $106,730.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And, Supervisor Broderick, I know that Supervisor Weishaupt.
I'm sorry.
Well, oh. No. After the line of questions,
Sure. Sure.
Go ahead, Supervisor Broderick.
Thank you. Perhaps either one of you may respond to this, but have there been proven cases of abuse of ICE detainers by law enforcement in the past, and what safeguards, if so, have been implemented here to guard against such cases?
Thank you, Chairman. Supervisor, with the use of the term abuse, I would say I'm not aware of any. I think to the point, are there instances in which Immigration and Customs Enforcement places a detainer on a subject and later determines that a deportation proceeding is not warranted and releases the detainer? The answer to that is yes. I don't have the number of how many instances that occurs in. But that happens in the world of law enforcement, as you well know, many times, in which an investigation is initiated, found not to be warranted, and then a release occurs. It's part of the fabric of American life. I'm not sure that I would characterize that as an abuse. That does occur, and I can certainly find out now the instances, say for 2011, that has occurred, if that's the wish.
Thank you. I guess, given the number of law enforcement agencies involved, including Sheriff Joel, I would be surprised if there are no allegations, at least, of abuse, because this is open to that kind of interpretive qualifications. That, for instance, on the document that we're looking at here on the resolution, there's an exception, and that's if the defendant pending criminal case has an outstanding criminal warrant or is identified as a gang member. Now, it seems to me, given my experience in law enforcement, that if you're looking for a reason to stop someone, you can usually find a broken taillight, you can usually find someone who doesn't signal for a turn, you can usually find reason to make that probable cause stop. And I'm a little concerned when I look at this document, I tend to favor this resolution, that the exception of being identified as a gang member is one of those hooks that might be used to that potentially could be abused, and that's not calling into question the integrity of law enforcement at all. It's just that having worked in law enforcement, I understand that the diversity of opinion on the parts of many officers and the essential discretion that each officer has in his or her command is very real. And unlike those people who compare law enforcement to military organizations, seem not to understand that they are very different in nature, in that command decisions in the military are made at the top and carried down. Decisions in law enforcement agencies are made at the bottom and reviewed, as you know well, in that fashion. So any individual, and of course, your review mechanisms are built into law enforcement. I understand that command officers are oftentimes overruled the initial judgments of law enforcement officers on the street. But I just have a little difficulty believing that there have not been identified and proven cases of the abuse of detention processes by law enforcement, although I'll take that your word on that, it doesn't particularly change my want to safeguard people from that kind of abuse. Officer McClavage, do you have any other opinion on that or other than what has been expressed by Mr. Bailey?
I do not have the stats or the numbers, so I would not comment on them not having those available.
Thank you very much.
Okay. So, do I have to look for these gentlemen?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You have mentioned that 247 and 322, respectively, were detainees. Out of what was the total number of people that had gone through the system during those years? Do you have those? Kind of determine if this is a, you know, what type of a percentage of people that end up on this detainee list.
Within 1,000, 39,000 people held in the Walk County Sheriff's Jail.
So out of 39,000, maybe there's like 200 or 300 maybe that are asked for detainees. And again, I just want to make one comment. I think that, and perhaps either one of these gentlemen want to answer, but again, we're not law enforcement professionals, and I think if the law enforcement professionals deem that this program is something that's beneficial for public safety, and we don't see evidence that there's, you know, out of 39,000, if 15,000 people are being asked to be detained, that's one thing, but it's when it's 200 or 300 out of 39,000, it doesn't seem like there's a rampant problem here. And I just don't think that we should be making decisions that are second guessing what the experts in law enforcement.
Okay, Supervisor Weisen, I know you've been patient, and I've tried to with the Sheriff's Department being here, but please.
Yes, actually, I just wanted to compliment Supervisor West for bringing this forward. And just on this one piece, there's a reason they call us lawmakers and they're law enforcement. We have all the tools and all the intelligence and all the capabilities to pass coherent, reasonable laws. And it's their job to enforce it. And that's the protection in a civil society, is the separation of the two. So I'm not willing to abdicate our responsibility and defer to law enforcement. Their job is to follow the rules that are set by the lawmakers. I think there are some concerns out there with these detainers, and like I said, I think it is very important that this resolution put forward by Supervisor West, that we approve it, and I would encourage my colleagues to support this. Thank you very much.
Supervisor West?
Thank you. I just want to make a couple of points. The first one is to differentiate between detainers posed to us by the state or by other municipalities. When you have that happen, you know with 100% certainty that A, the person who is the subject of that detainer has committed a crime, and that they are wanted by another municipality. In the case of ICE detainers, you have individuals who have been pulled over for driving offenses who are now being detained and have not been put through the system, and you do not know that ICE is coming for them. And as Inspector Bailey said, there are cases where ICE processes someone and decides, well, I'm not coming. And then who ends up eating the cost? We do. The other thing that's interesting about ICE detainers is that the 48 hours is work week hours. And so if you detain someone on a Friday and there's no court until Monday, then we're eating the cost for those additional days. We're also eating a cost for additional holidays. I'm not asking that we do not honor ICE detainers at all. What I'm asking in this resolution, if you read it, is that I'm asking for people who don't fit into the category of, you know, serious or violent felony offenders, basically people, you know, people who have committed driving offenses, people who have committed other minor offenses, who are being held away from their families, for them not to be, for us not to honor ICE detainers. And it's 100% within the purview of Milwaukee County to not honor those ICE detainers. This is a voluntary program. It is a request. Now, if they're requesting that, you know, someone who is convicted of a homicide be held on an ICE detainer, I am 110% in agreement that that person should be held. But again, what I'm talking about is people who do not fit into the criteria outlined on the second page of the resolution, people who have been picked up for whatever reason. And again, if you do your research, the majority of the people that we are holding on these ICE detainers are people who have minor violations, driving violations. And some of them, and I know, again, when you hear the term ICE detainer, you like to think that this person is someone who is undocumented, and that's absolutely not the case. These are immigrants. And I did pass out a form. I did pass out a handout that had the breakdown of our immigrant population here in Wisconsin. And as you can see, you know, we are a state of immigrants. 88.4% of Wisconsin's children have immigrant parents and are U.S. citizens. And so this affects a wide variety of our citizenship. And so, again, I just want to reiterate, I'm not asking that we obliviate this program. I am not asking and will not ask in the future that we do what Cook County did, which is to say we will not honor ICE detainers at all. What I'm asking is, can we please stick within the purview outlined on the second page and just detain people that fit into these specific crimes? Thank you.
Questions for the inspectors? Okay, Supervisor Schmidt.
Thank you.
I see the both sides as usual here. And I'm going to get right to the point here, is that in Supervisor West, now if I'm the one of the 200 or 300 people that I care, I guess, and I try to appreciate that. And also what I'm trying to appreciate here is, you know, you made a comment initially on Mr. Bailey on does this really, you know, save us any money? So I guess the question I'm looking for is, just practically speaking, does this deter the sheriff's office anyway? Is this, I mean, you know, people who are having serious crimes are going to be held. So is this a way actually not to put some people in jeopardy who obviously many, you know, can't afford the 3 or 4 days that we were talking about and we're all concerned about? We're concerned about the cost. Sheriff's budget got hit. Your other budget got hit the last couple of years, I would like to say also. Okay. Okay, get right to that point. I mean, there's an assertion here, and I'm not just strictly talking about just money, but that enters in all our decisions all the time, too, it has to. So, are you fine? My train of thought there, please?
I think I am, Mr. Chairman, if it pleases the board. The for me to be in agreement with the supervisor's point that because these individuals were brought in on minor charges, and in some instances perhaps traffic charges, that no need for federal law enforcement will stem from that act, would require me to, the moment I receive a detainer from ICE, conclude where that investigation is going to end, what the federal law enforcement agency knows about the individual, what can be within 48 hours known about the individual. But it forces me to make a decision the moment they're presented at the county jail that I'm not going to honor that detainer, release the subject from custody, and potentially find out later from the federal law enforcement agency that there was a great reason to hold that individual. That's sort of the nature of law enforcement. So what it is that presents the individual to me at my jail and what is ultimately knowable at a federal law enforcement level about that individual are two very different things. And that's why the control is that the detainer has 48-hour limits on local law enforcement. That's what the control point is, to make sure we're not engaging in long-term detentions of individuals using our authority. Once the federal agency accepts custody of the inmate and is now holding them under their authority, then they go under federal guidelines. So I don't want to give the supposition that in law enforcement we know as we meet a person on the side of a street or in the booking room in the Milwaukee County Jail everything there is to know that's knowable about that individual. That's really why we have a detainer system. And I suppose that's the best way to put it. So to be in the practice of saying I'm not going to honor another law enforcement agency's detainer for 48 hours because I think I know everything that's knowable about that individual from a law enforcement standpoint is an area that I'm not comfortable with.
Questions for the gentleman here. Supervisor Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dudley Smith, Henry Claybridge. That reimbursement dollar amount for 2009, what was that again,
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, please. The dollar amount for 2009 was $135,373.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, just to clear up a control point in the resolution that the supervisor has put forward, she stipulates that she's not talking about felony convictions or serious misdemeanor convictions. And the reality of that is this resolution would have a much less of effect. I don't want the committee to believe that my testimony is that this would obviate, to use her language, or obliterate the detainer program. Most of the people in those numbers that were held by the sheriff's office were held for felonies and misdemeanors as well. They had underlying charges. Thank you.
Supervisor Romo West, account, please.
Thank you. I just wanted to, Deputy Inspector McClavich was kind enough to share with us the reimbursement rates, but I think another question worth asking is how much was the actual cost to Milwaukee County for incarcerating these individuals? Because if we are receiving the actual cost for incarcerating these individuals, then we would probably be alone in the nation. That is one of the number one complaints from other municipalities, is that they do not receive actual reimbursement for the actual cost of the incarceration. They receive a daily rate, which may or may not be what it has cost Milwaukee County to incarcerate these individuals. Thank you.
Any other questions for the inspectors? Before I excuse you guys, right now, Inspector Bailey, you can run circles around me. I guess, because I'm brand spanking new, is your department in favor of this or not in favor of this?
Thank you. A simple question for a simple answer, Mr. Chairman. We are not in favor of not honoring law enforcement detainer requests from other law enforcement agencies.
Thank you. Okay. Other questions from committee members? I know that Supervisor Harris had comments, so I look to you, Supervisor Harris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just like to withdraw my motion for approval and ask and make a motion to refer back to staff, the item back to staff.
Okay. Change the discussion a little bit. Any other comments?
I would just wonder at the rationale for referral back.
Well, there were some questions, particularly the concern that you had, which helped me to, you know, as far as if someone appeared to look like a gangbanger or something of that nature in the gang, that sort of helped me to make my decision to refer it back. But just to get a little more clarity and see if we need to clarify the language or controls.
Supervisor Broderick.
Well, I only said that as a cautionary comment. I'm not objecting to the way this is defined. It's the way it's implemented. I see that as a potential problem, but I don't see it as a problem that could be corrected in terms of language, but rather in terms of practice would apply. So I'm not too sure that if referring it back to committee would do anything to alter this.
Well, then I withdraw my.
Supervisor Harris.
Thank you. Sorry, I was talking too fast in our turn. Well, I will withdraw my referral back to staff and go back to my original motion, and that is a motion to approve.
Okay. Any other comments, questions? Supervisor Alexander, welcome. Come on forward. Thank you, gentlemen. Nice to have you with us. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had a few comments from being in the audience.
Yeah.
First was, it seems that Supervisor Romo West's assertion that ICE detainment is unconstitutional seems to refer to whether or not ICE can force our compliance, not whether or not ICE detainment for non-serious crimes is actually allowable. So I just wanted to ask for clarification on what part are we talking about when we ask about constitutionality.
Supervisor
Ronald
West.
Thank you.
Can you address that, please?
I can. I'm sorry, and just to go back for a second, to Supervisor Broderick's point regarding the abuse of ICE detainers, I do have, and I can copy and submit to the committee that Gail has a lawsuit claiming that ICE detainers are unconstitutional, and do have a case in point of a gentleman who was stopped for a driving offense and was detained. And there is another case in New York City where a gentleman was just awarded $145,000 after being detained inappropriately through an ICE detainer. So my understanding of ICE detainers is that initially an ICE detainer was used for drug offenses. And we have now wandered very far away from that. And so in regards to the unconstitutionality of it, again, there have been states that have pursued this in court because of ICE coming in and commandeering their local resources and have won those cases. So that's, so it has been found unconstitutional on several occasions when challenged. Does that answer your question, Supervisor
Alexander, does that help you?
Somewhat. I just want to clarify again. So it sounds like there are some cases pending questioning the constitutionality of whether or not ICE can force the county's compliance, not the issue of whether or not ICE detainment on its own is constitutional, correct?
There is nothing saying that Milwaukee County or any county has to honor ICE detainers. It is 100% optional. And if you called ICE and asked them, they would tell you that. ICE also has ripped up all of the MOAs that they've had with states because of some of this legislation that is now coming about. And so it is a courtesy that we are extending to ICE. And again, I'm not asking that we say no to them for every single incident, but what I am saying is that unless these individuals fit into, the categories stated in the resolution, that we say no, that we have better use of our time and our resources than to hold people on driving offenses and such.
Supervisor Alexander.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The second point that I wanted to make was regarding lines 35 through 38 in the resolution itself. In reading it, I would just comment that it seems to suggest that Milwaukee County would want to officially oppose the potential for deportation proceedings against illegal aliens, and it is my opinion that that does not seem like a wise position to take when this resolution would impose a hindering resolve on our law enforcement, and it would potentially be contrary to the county board's agenda to build better relationships across governmental units. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, and Supervisor Alexander, not to be the wet blanket, you will have that opportunity on the board floor, but I did want to give you some leeway right now because I'm impressed. I know that you were in attendance at yesterday's meeting. You're not on this committee yet. You're here. You have questions, and so I'm going to encourage that. I would also say that Supervisor Romo West is available to answer specific questions. But as a new supervisor, Supervisor Alexander, you will be able to have your day in court, if you will, on this item at the board floor. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
If there is nothing else, I'm going to look to our clerk. Go back to the original motion by Supervisor Harris for approval.
Supervisors Harris?
Aye.
Schmidt?
No.
Johnson?
Aye.
Wyshon?
Aye.
Broderick?
Aye.
Sanfilippo?
No.
Mr. Chair?
No.
4 ayes, 3 noes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. Madam Clerk, item number 4.
Item number 4, from the Chief Judge submitting notification of an emergency purchase to provide security staffing at the Day Reporting Center. This item is informational only and thus otherwise directed by the committee.
Welcome, Chief Judge Jeff Kramers. How do you pronounce your last name? Celeste. Working on it. Anyways, and thank you for your patience. I know that you've endured the last hour and a half.
That's very interesting.
Judge Kramers, I think your hair has gotten even grayer since you came in at 9 o'clock.
That's not what's causing my hair. Thank you, Matt. Congratulations on your new chairmanship, Supervisor, and good morning to the rest of the committee. We actually have 4 items here. Lump them in or combine them in the following fashion. This first one, item 4, we could speak to, and then the other 3, 5, 6, and 7 really, I think, should be taken up together with all respect. So item 4 simply relates to the fact that until January of this year, the Sheriff's Department provided security at the Day Reporting Center in the form of deputy sheriffs, sergeants, or regular deputy sheriffs, because he was responsible for running the Day Reporting Center until about a year and a half ago. When control of the Day Reporting Center was transferred to the courts, the county board gave the courts money in the budget to pay the sheriff a cross charge for
those same security services. I was notified in late December that the sheriff would no longer be providing deputy sheriffs at the day reporting center and that I should make my own arrangements for security detail at the day reporting center, notwithstanding the fact that everybody at the day reporting center, or most of the people at the day reporting center, I should say, were under the custody of the sheriff. They were there on electronic monitoring and answerable to his rules. I asked the sheriff to delay that change until the issue related to the 48 deputy sheriffs being laid off was resolved. I indicated that my intention was to hire some of those laid off deputy sheriffs as replacement security detail as soon as we knew who they were going to be. That request was declined, and so I was put in the position of having to get a security detail in place on a very short-term basis. We did that by entering into a contract with G4S to provide security services or security detail at the day reporting center. As soon as the issue was resolved with respect to laying off the 48 deputy sheriffs, I terminated the contract with G4S and hired two of the laid-off deputy sheriffs to be the security detail at the day reporting center, and that's been working out very well. So the information I'm providing with respect to item four is simply to notify you that we have, that we had entered into that emergency contract with G4S, but since then it has been terminated as we no longer need that contract. I'm happy to answer any questions with respect to that item.
Yes, Supervisor Jersey, please.
Could you just ask the Chief Judge to clarify the budgetary impact on the fact that the courts are now covering that cost as opposed to the sheriff's department?
I'd be happy to. I can't give you a specific dollar amount yet because it's in a bit of flux. First of all, I don't think we have the final charges from the Sheriff's Department for the period of time into January that they did provide staffing, and there was a little bit of overlap with G4S while they provided some training. Then we have the G4S amount. We know what that is. I don't have that in front of me right now. And then I know what we're paying the two folks there now. I do know that the G4S contract, we paid them $22,521, and we're estimating about $97,000 plus for the balance of the year for the deputy sheriffs we've hired. We're going to be asking to hire a third one, not full-time, but as a staff or shift relief, if you will, for the two, so that if one goes on vacation or gets sick, we still have two people there. It will be something less than what the county board gave us to pay the sheriff for the year. How much less, I can't tell you. I'm guessing it could be a considerable sum of money. The amount we originally had was $226,000, I think. So maybe as much as $100,000 less.
Supervisor Joseph, you're okay with...
I mean, we'll obviously provide you with the exact dollar amount as soon as we get it.
You will have front row seat, Supervisor Jersey, when it comes before your committee. So, okay, Supervisor Harris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to have some clarifying questions/possible comments. I just want to say thanks to the Chief Judge for looking at other alternatives that will help to save money in providing security for the day reporting centers. I am not sure I know exactly where our day reporting centers are located. Are these like centers that are located around the city? Are they here at the courthouse or a safety building? Like, where are the day reporting centers?
There's only one. It's in 9th and Mitchell.
Okay.
And I'm happy extend the offer to all of the county board, not just the members of this committee, to come down and see the operation either on an individual basis whenever you're available, or we have in most years had an open house that we invite the, all members of the county board to, where we can show off the programs and the census and how the operation is run. We have people there for about an hour and a half program over lunch. Usually is when we've done the open house, but if somebody prefers a private tour, we're happy to arrange that.
Okay, and like how many people are actually in this in a daily reporting program?
Our census cap on the census is 150, but for reasons that we'll go into apparently or hopefully next month, our census is down right now. I think we're at around 50, between 40 and 50.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's lower than we would like it, and we're trying to take steps to get it up.
Okay. And just my final question or comment. I understand that this used to be a three, or you actually had a three-year agreement with the sheriff to do electronic monitoring, and now he is pulling back on that agreement?
No. I wouldn't characterize it that way. The sheriff has statutory authority to decide who to put on electronic monitoring. I think, Supervisor, what you're referring to is about 3 years ago, the sheriff and I met and agreed that, and in conjunction with then County Executive Walker's position as well, we agreed that anybody who that a judge said could go to the day reporting center as a condition of their sentence, that the judge was also saying that person could be put on electronic monitoring. So that would have the effect of saving a jail bed for everybody sent to the day reporting center. Because prior to that, there were people who judges were sending to jail but saying during the day they could go to the day reporting center. The county executive and the sheriff would say, well, that's not really saving us any money because at night they're coming back to the jail. So we had a meeting, the sheriff and I, and agreed on some parameters of that in terms of the type of charges that it would cover. The risk assessment score on a risk assessment tool had to be below a certain number. And if they met that criteria, they would be and allowed to go to the day reporting center by a judge, then the sheriff would put them on electronic monitoring. That seems to be somewhat different in the last several months, and that was the subject, or one of the subjects of the other issue that we'll talk about next month.
Okay, thank you. Other questions?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just briefly, I wanted to point out that the Chief Judge has not only saved money, but improved quality service in hiring well-trained Milwaukee County deputies. That certainly was a win-win for all of your
problems.
Thank you. Any other comments, questions? Item number four is informational. And if they're... Supervisor Johnson?
No.
Okay. Then I thank both of you. It's my understanding, Supervisor Schmidt, you're interested in making a motion for items 5, 6, and 7?
Well, as the Chief Judge alluded to, it would be in our facts, of course. They're all very similar in fact that any increases we have funds that... increasing expenditure will be offset 100%. That's true in most of the cases by increasing operative state office of justice and systems. These systems, it's a state of court system, so I'd like to see the state company taking care of the responsibility. So if I know we have to work hard in all these areas, so that is much appreciated. So, budget times. They're fairly, they do on the committee. They don't have to talk about CAD, but I mean, that's an area where. No, funding is so important. You know, we're talking about alternatives and non-incarceration, the day reporting center, and the job that does. So that's increasing. I guess that's the only comment I make besides the approval of that, please, is that you foresee any roadblocks in the future in these areas. These areas are so critical to the court's function, even with the state assistance. Especially, yeah, as I mentioned, if I can point that one out, could I have any comment on that, please?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Supervisor Schmidt, if I could just step back and just give you a couple of sentences about why these items are here. All of these relate to the fact that the county board and the county executive funded universal screening, which we started in January, The result has been a significant, we believe, a significant drop in pretrial jail population. So there's been a significant savings to the county. We believe at the end of the year will show a savings significantly in excess of what the county is spending on universal screening. That's the good news. This other part isn't really bad news, but it's something we have to react to, which is the increase that we've seen by moving people out of the jail is we have more people on pretrial supervision in one or more of our programs. And so our pretrial supervision program, their census has almost tripled. Now, it's not, it's more detail than maybe you want. I'm happy to give it to you if you want it, but we've increased the number of people, but we've changed the level of supervision for many of them, the number of times they have to be in contact, that is tied directly to the risk that they pose, as opposed to just somebody saying, well, we're going to put you on every program we have. We've targeted the programs and the resources for that. The result of that is we have many more people on pretrial supervision. So what we've done, what we're asking in these three items, is to allow us to transfer money from the office, essentially from the Office of Justice Assistance, for these three different programs, to allow us to pay for the additional resources we need to monitor those people. With respect to TAD, that's money that we're not taking money away from the TAD program. That's unused money from last year from our grant that is in excess. The AIM money, and I hope and pretty optimistic that the state will continue to fund the TAD program, because it around the state has been it's returning on its investment at 4, 5, or 6 to 1 in state dollars, so it's a very successful program. The AIM program is ending, so this is it, actually it's over. So this is unused money from AIM, but AIM's not coming back, I don't think. So that's a one-time infusion of money. It was, so that's what that's about. And the third one, the money from the Office of Justice Assistance, was they gave us a grant of $100,000 to supplement what the county board gave us for universal screening. We didn't use it all last year because we didn't really kick it into high gear until January. So we were just asking for authority to apply the money this year. So that's, I hope that answered your question.
Okay, so for the record, I'm going to ask the clerk to read items 5, 6, and 7. I know that Senator Supervisor Schmidt asked for approval. Obviously, if any committee members have individual questions on 5, 6, or 7, we can take those up. So, Madam Clerk, please.
Item number 5 from the Chief Judge, requesting authorization to receive and expend $77,192 in remaining 2011 funds from the State of Wisconsin Office of Justice Assistance in support of the Universal Screening Program, and to amend the 2012 Professional Services Contract Justice 2000 to allow for the expenditure of these funds. Item number 6, from the Chief Judge, requesting authorization to receive and expend $113,172 in remaining 2010-2011 grant funds from the State of Wisconsin Office of Justice Assistance in support of the Assess, Inform, and Measure Program, and to extend the Professional Services Contract with Justice 2000 to allow for the expenditure of these funds. Item number 7, from the Chief Judge, requesting authorization to receive and expend $51,315 in remaining 2009-2011 grant funds from the State of Wisconsin Office of Justice Assistance in support of the Treatment Alternatives and Diversion Program, and to amend the 2012 Professional Services Contract with Justice 2000 to allow for the expenditure of these funds.
Any questions on 5, 6, or 7? Supervisor Harris.
Yes, thank you. I actually have a question on number 5. I noticed that there is no, indication on how $22,808 was allocated for the $100,000 that was awarded. And I'm not sure if normally there's like a breakdown of how this money is allocated and spent, but when I was reading this resolution, it just sort of sent up like, a question for me that said, well, you're requesting the remaining $77,192, but how was, you know, it, the $22,808 was spent?
Chair and board supervisor, we expended the other $22,000 change last year, 2010, on universal screening, and it all went for Justice 2000 for staff costs for case managers and the data system development. And we had, of course, had to provide an accounting to OJA for all of this money, not just the $77,000 that we're going to be spending this year, but the $22,000 that was spent last year, which was also OJA's money. We had to account to them for how we spent the money.
Okay. So can we request a copy of that?
Sure.
Well, I would like to request a copy.
And I should also tell you that in next month we will be providing, as required and requested by the board, a informational report on the status of universal screening, as, you know, as the entire program, what we've done to date, what we know to date about it, and the cost to date. So that is on, will be on your, hopefully be on your agenda next month. That was a part of the budget requirements that were placed on us.
Okay.
That'd be a compliment.
And I can wait for it at that time. Then I don't need an additional report. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Anybody else? Committee members? Audience? Yes, Reverend. Please, come on up. And then I need to have you fill out a card, please. Okay. But your name for those listening?
Joseph L. Wanger, and member of the MICA AODA Treatment Committee and working on these issues over the years. I sense a support from the board members here and certainly from the county board in the past for such programs as universal screening and TAD, Treatment Alternatives and Diversion. But I don't want to take, we don't want to take anything for granted. We've worked hard. We being MICA and Wisdom organization of 35 congregations in the city, don't want to take anything for granted. We helped to get the TAD legislation passed back in 2005, and we're just grateful that we have a county board and we have a chief judge and a district attorney that see the value of these programs that have demonstrated their evidence-based results indicate that it saves money and it saves lives and it builds the positive vibes in the community that we have people in charge who really care about the health of the community and the safety of the community, because this all contributes to a healthier and a safer community. So we just want to underscore our support for universal screening, the TAD programming, and our deep concern for increasing the effectiveness back again at the Day Report Center, which was brought up earlier, and I understand will be a topic of conversation at your next meeting. But that's another example of a program that's evidence-based that shows that it really contributes in every way, economically, and success stories for individuals and families, that we just want to do everything we can to support those programs, and I encourage the board and this committee to do exactly what I think you're about to do.
Well, thank you, Reverend. I know that there's at least one other member from MICA here in support, Sister Rose, yes. And anybody else, Reverend, from MICA here? Okay, if not. Before we vote, I just have one question, and that is, on all three of these, obviously there was a balance that, in essence, I don't want to say there was extra money, but how is that found? I mean, it's obviously you keep track, and then there's, because there's a deadline, and can you just walk me through the mechanics of that?
Certainly.
Go ahead.
Morning.
Yeah.
every month I get expenditure and cost reports from Justice 2000, who is our contract provider for all of its services. And every month I'm monitoring where the program is at in terms of spending. Are we running surplus or deficit? When I realized late last year into the first of this year that we were going to have these kinds of surpluses in these programs, I approached the Office of Justice Assistance and said, here's where we're at spending-wise. I realize these grants are due to expire. Can't we do a continuation of these and receive these funds into 2012 to help us support universal screening, continuation of the TAD program, and supervision of folks in the community, and we work together to come up with a way to do that. The surplus involves both of these were two and a half year grants for TAD and a 2 year for AIM. The AIM budget, the state basically gave us funds in an amount that really exceeded what we had budgeted. So we knew we were going to end up in a surplus situation with that program. So we worked collectively, monitored the budget, monitored spending, and went to work developing a plan for use of those funds this year to help us with the pretrial operation and the impact that universal screening has had on those services.
I would also add that if we were able to start universal screening 3 months sooner, then we were able to really get it going full bore. We would have used all this money last year, but we didn't start the screening, in terms of doing it 24/7 in the jail until January 17th. So that's why.
Well, let me and us acknowledge you, Ms. Shablesky, for monitoring that and finding, in essence, this extra money. I know that you're just doing your job, but it's nice to be able to have these funds, and so thank you for going the extra mile there. If there is no further question, then we can take items 5, 6, and 7 together. Madam Clerk, please.
Supervisors Harris?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Weishaupt?
Aye.
Broderick?
Aye.
Sanfilippo?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
7 ayes, 0 noes. The item is approved.
Thank you.
Items are approved.
All right. Item number 8, Madam Clerk.
Item number 8, from the Election Commission Administrator, submitting an informational report addressing concerns expressed by Supervisors Jurczyk and Lipscomb regarding ballot issues affecting the April 3, 2012 spring election and action plan and budgeting for upcoming recall and fall elections. This item is informational only and thus otherwise directed by the committee.
Very good. And I welcome two supervisors who were the genesis of this, Supervisor Lipscomb, Supervisor Jurczyk. Lisa, why don't you introduce yourself and we'll let you proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Lisa Catlin Weiner. I'm the administrator of the Milwaukee County Election Commission. I'm here to, first of all, I want to apologize for the lengthiness of my report. I felt I needed to include every detail of this very complex, first of all, the April election was a very complex one with all of the different ballot styles involved. When all of the supervisors are running and there's all the aldermen in the city of Milwaukee and other districts, or other municipalities. It's just very complex with the school districts and everything. And I do want to stress that the initial ballot delays were caused by things that were out of our control. They were at the state level with the certification process. So we had a late start to begin with, and then we had issues with our new ballot vendor in which they're a very competent printer. I do want to say that they just did not receive the proper resources from another vendor in order to do the layout, and they have taken action at their own expense. We are confident that they can continue to produce ballots for Milwaukee County. This week's election was without any major concerns, just the usual little ones, like a few ballots jamming, but nothing major. I mean, that's not unusual in when you have 450,000 ballots that you have to print. Even with our vendor that we had previous for over 20 years, I mean, that's not uncommon. Other things, let's see. I think if there's any questions, I think I covered everything in my report, but I just want to stress that a lot of the delays were you know, out of our control. We did the best that we can to resolve it, and I apologize for any inconvenience that may have caused any voters in not getting their absentee ballots.
Well, and I appreciate the lengthiness of this report. I'm going to look to our two colleagues that were in best response for getting us going. Supervisor Jurczyk, I'll start with you and have you go through your questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Unfortunately, the timing of this committee was unfortunate. The Wisconsin Municipal Clerks Convention is taking place today. Because the clerks in my South Shore districts wanted to be here, wanted to present what they see as many concerns. And I actually got a call from Supervisor Taylor, who followed up with the Franklin clerk and actually asked for a delay in today's hearing. I wanted to inform the chair of that request. I did feel that it was probably important that we have this discussion today because we've got a June election. I understand the complication of the elections this year, and I don't want to undermine that reason. I basically agree with the comment that with regard to the initial delays being out of the Election Commission's control is probably a correct statement. But once it got sent to us, it no longer became the concerns were out of our control at the state level, but became a real concern at the county level. It seems, and I'd like to have a response, if I could, Mr. Chair, and I'll do it through the chair. It seems that a lot of these problems were caused really through the procurement department. I believe we were initiating new procedures not only in our own procurement department, but also with regard to working with the City of Milwaukee Election Commission in attempting to do printing for both the County Election Commission and the City of Milwaukee Election Commission together. And I would like to stop, Mr. Chair, and ask if I'm correct in that assumption and allow the response.
Well, I'd like to have a response from Mrs. Weiner, if you would. Could please. I don't know about the whole procurement, but I did read the report, but I know that you obviously were very, very involved with that, so Lisa, please.
Okay, Mr. Chair. My understanding is that we had to put the print project out for bid. We're only allowed, and I'm not familiar with the procedures at the procurement division, but we were told we had to put it out for bid last year for this year, and Burton and Meyer Print Printer came through with the lowest bid, and we basically had to go with them unless we had a very legitimate concern, and we didn't at that point because, you know, we haven't experienced them, but I had met with them, and I felt confident that they could do it because I felt that they were able to get the resources to lay out a ballot and design it properly.
And I guess what you're saying, I don't think the words would come out, but obviously Bert Meyer was in essence the low bid and had taken the place of, was it Merrick, who had done the ballots the last, was it 20 years?
Yes, over 20 years.
Okay. Supervisor Jurczyk, please.
Mr. Chair, could you ask her to identify her statement? We were told. Who told them to do that?
Oh, the procurement department.
Procurement told you to go out and get bids.
Well, they put out, I think we received a document saying that, you know, this had to go out for bid.
Which begets other questions as far as how much actual cost savings there were, and I know that, I'll let Lisa speak. So let's talk about the finances. Lisa, what we paid X, and then there were these issues and delays, and then Bert Meyer had to, in essence, pay their own monies to make us whole, make them whole. So I'll let you elaborate.
Okay, well, for the April election, all the ballots had to be reprinted. We did not, we should not have received it. We did not receive a bill from Burton & Meyer for the defective ballots, so we did not have to pay for those. There was considerable expense, though, from the, there were two printers that were hired to expedite the job, Rotographics and Fond du Lac. And their print job, they had to do it, very quickly over the weekend, and it cost a lot of, I think I have it quoted in the, I think it was over $166,000, which averages about 65 cents per ballot. The average cost we pay for a three-column ballot is 25 cents. The mayor group printed the City of Milwaukee's ballots, and they charged approximately 25 cents per ballot. But it was necessary to have two vendors at that time to expedite the ballots because they were late already.
Supervisor Drew, you still have the floor, please.
Thank you. And please confirm my fear. And I just want to make a comment. Our election commission serves 18 municipalities with regard to all of their elections. And I want to underline, the City of Milwaukee has its own election commission for their local elections. So some people see this as a duplication of service. I don't believe it's a duplication of service in that our county election commission has to work with the state certified thing, and I'm not trying to get into all of the detail of the work. But because procurement forced this change, we were dealing with a printer that was unfamiliar, and we had these hang-ups because of this new printer. I'm told by my clerks that the old printer that we had actually had an election machine right in the print shop. We run some sample ballots, test it, find out if it worked. When they were satisfied, they do the entire run. So this was a well-experienced printer, knew the needs of our election machines and so on. I can tell you, I have been told by the Cudahy clerk, we actually denied someone the right to vote. You know, we're always concerned about fraud in elections. But we had a firefighter in Cudahy who was going on a charitable mission, taking his own vacation time, knew he was going to be leaving. The clerks are supposed to have all of the ballots ready at least 3 weeks before the election day to do these absentee ballots. They had none. And the final catch on this, as I understand it, is they were given temporary ballots to be hand-filled. Eventually they used those because the actual ballots are still not ready, and then have to transcribe the absentee ballots onto the actual ballots when they arrive. But that wasn't even done in time for the absentee ballots to get out in time. And this firefighter that I'm talking about eventually went on his charitable trip and lost the opportunity to vote. So I can document at least one case for this board where we denied someone the right to vote. But our election commission serves 18 municipalities, which tend to be the suburban municipalities. And we dropped the ball. And I'm not going to give Lisa's hard time on this. Procurement gets an F. I'm going to say it right here. Procurement department gets an F on this. They did not see this thing done smoothly. And they are really the cause of these problems. Now, there continue to be additional issues that I would like to see addressed. I won't spend the committee's valuable time. I think we need to perhaps go back to the election commission and get these issues addressed. But I continue to be very concerned about the budgetary impact of the November election with regard to there is no budget. And I asked the question, are we under budgeted for this? I know budget committee asked that, our finance committee asked that last year. And they used basically the budget for 2010, which included both the spring and November election. But no one allowed for recalls. I remember Lisa actually making the statement, we never budget for recall elections. But then we should address the contingency, because we're going to be taking these funds out of contingency, and we are going to have a real concern about that, Mr. Chairman, and I'm just going to express that because I think I do think we need procurement to give us a fairly good report. I will work with them. I will work with the Election Commission, get our clerks the opportunity to come and make a full report to the Election Commission. But we should be fully aware certain individuals were denied the right to vote because procurement gets an F on their ability to get us the ballots. And I'm going to make that statement because I've looked into this enough to understand what happened here. And a lot of the clerks tell me this was totally unavoidable. I mean, totally avoidable had we gone with our experienced clerk printers, especially during this unusual year that we are dealing with. Thank you.
For Supervisor Weishaupt, I'm going to look to Supervisor Lipscomb. I don't know if you have any comments. I wanted to work with two supervisors that, in essence, brought this item before this committee, and we'll go to committee members.
Thanks, Chair. I don't know that I shared all the sense of relatives here to make the printer qualified printer. They're able to print properly once by the correct technical assistance from the folding machine vendor. I guess that's why I wanted to probe a little deeper into that issue of whether I may be mixing names, but Command Central and the folding machine vendor. I mean, the technical specifications have to be provided to the printer. It appears that they provided some incorrect information. I'm wondering whether there's another issue here. Do they also provide ballots? And they actually want to need the ballot printer. So is there an additional issue here that I don't want to suggest sabotage, but clearly they had a role in not providing complete and accurate information to our new printer.
Lisa, you've been through numerous elections. Could you please elaborate?
Okay, Mr. Chair, committee. I just want to clarify that Command Central was not the vendor that was involved in this. It's Election Systems and Software, ESNS. They were interested in the ballot contract, but they did not meet our specification. We wanted a printer that was more locally located within like 45 minutes of Milwaukee County, because there weren't any within Milwaukee County that had ballot would be able to print ballots. So it was Election Systems and Software that were supposed to supply the technical manual, and apparently I did speak with them. They were disappointed that they were not able to bid on our job, and they knew that we were looking at other vendors, and they provided this manual, which basically was useless to our vendor because it was for newer equipment, and ESNS was well aware of the type of equipment that Milwaukee County uses.
Thank you, sir. I think that's the more relevant issue here, because I mean, procurement's ability to verify the printer can meet technical qualifications of printing, I don't think are at question, because Virgin Meyer can do that. It's proven that they can do that. I think there's a real issue with this vendor, the panel is dependent on this vendor by this technical assistance, and that they had a conflict here. And they clearly fell down on it. So I think that's a larger issue that's not necessarily addressed in the report.
Okay, anything further?
There was a suggestion that the statutory issue, which I think comprises about 7 days of delay, that there's an effort to address that. I'm just wondering, is GAB bringing something to the legislature? How is that being addressed? Is it, I believe it impacts us not only in recall elections, but also special elections, which we may have a series of bills triggered as well.
Do you want to comment on that, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Unfortunately, the statutory deadlines for ballots and for elections, especially for this recall election, are very unrealistic. And it would take a change in law to change those deadlines. In fact, for this recall election that we have right now, the deadline to certify the candidates is the same that we have to have the ballots for the June recall election available to the clerks, which is impossible. It doesn't make sense, and so we just have to work with what we can, and I don't know if the GAB is doing anything about that.
Okay, let me look to committee members. Supervisor Weishaupt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just didn't want to have this constant finger-pointing about procurement and things like that. The fact is, if we're going to go that route, then everybody literally on the county board and government is at fault, because we constantly demand, and make statements that we're not going to raise taxes. So, of course, you go out for these bids and you selected the lowest bidder. You didn't allow in the procurement process to say, this person, they have a higher cost, but they've done a good job for the last 20 years. So if you're going to put those unrealistic constraints on, and then this is one of the ramifications of it, I think it is totally wrong to come back and then blame a department that we've received numerous audits on that say that, they need more resources and they need more staff in procurement. And then to come back and kind of, slam them with saying they somehow are responsible for depriving someone the right to vote, I just think is wrong, and it gets off track of what are the real problems with the Election Commission and the coordination problems. And I would rather work on those problems in an atmosphere of positive feedback rather than just slamming one department out over another. Thank you.
Thank you. Supervisor Sanfilippo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It sounds, and maybe we get a clarification from Ms. Weiner, but it sounds to me really that this whole thing maybe boils down to almost a communication problem, in that I don't think maybe the process itself was necessarily flawed and somebody was wrong. It's just it seems from the outside that maybe procurement didn't have enough involvement from the Election Commission to explain to them all of the intricacies of getting these ballots printed and what goes into it. I mean, if this isn't just your normal printing job where you're going to put out an RFP and get a printer that can print it. And so I'm wondering what kind of involvement there was between procurement and the Election Commission as far as writing the specifications for the RFP. And then also, in hindsight, it's always 2020, but starting a brand new printer off in January when you have an election in February right away, it sounds like there was not enough time, and maybe it goes back to not having proper specs written in the RFP to make sure that the printer had everything they need to do practice ballots and make sure that these things were working. It almost seems like the whole process was rushed from the beginning. So rather than try to lay blame on who did what and created the whole mess, maybe we need to at least look at the process that created this whole thing, because there certainly isn't anything wrong with putting out an RFP and trying to save money on getting a product or service. But we can't just fault the printer, and you can't just fault one department over another. It sounds to me like there was just this communication gap, and then I think we have a lot to learn about when we're going to do this again in the future.
Ms. Weiner, can you maybe just fill in some of those points? Obviously, you were there.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. I did express my concerns with procurement at the time that when the bids came in, and it appeared that the a vendor who had never printed ballots before was listed as the lowest, and I was concerned because I knew that this election year would be crazy with all the multiple elections and with the fact that there would most likely be a recall election. And basically they said, well, we need more, and I'm not pointing fingers or anything, but I guess apparently my concerns were not enough to justify going with the previous printer. We did meet with Burton and Meyer prior to them submitting their bid, and they did their homework. They contacted Election Systems and Software and found out what would be necessary to get, we called it a certification, that they would need to be certified by Election Systems and Software to do ballot layout and design. They contacted ESNS, and ESNS said, okay, for $2,500, you can purchase this, it's called a print kit. and in which they made arrangements to do. However, once the bid was awarded, Burton and Meyer contacted ESNS, and ESNS said, well, we have to wait till the contract's in effect until January 1st, and we have to get the request from the from the customer, meaning Milwaukee County. January 1st came along, they still gave Burton and Meyer a hard time, and then they eventually received this manual, which was out of date, useless. So that put us in the bind right at the beginning in January. And it forced us, we had to hire another printer, Rotographics and Bondelec, to provide the layout and design services. But Burton and Meyer did print those ballots with no problems at all. But they did not design them.
All of that was, like post-RFP. What correct. Involvement did you have pre-RFP to inform procurement as far as the intricacies of what's involved in getting a ballot vendor?
Okay, Mr. Chairman, what we did was we met with the buyer at procurement, and we've been through this before, actually, and we reviewed what was previously submitted, and very tight specifications. Like I said, they have to be able to produce large quantities in a short period of time. They have to be certified in ballot layout and design. They have to be within a 45-minute radius of Milwaukee County so that we could have deliveries. So that kind of limited the number of vendors that would be available to do this job, but that's what we did. Maybe we should have done more. I don't know. When I did it before, been through it, we had no issues because Merrick, they were the ones that won the bid last time.
Are you finished?
Yeah, just one last comment, and then what I'd like to do is make a motion just to lay the item over and give the other clerks an opportunity to be able to come and speak maybe next month, and Supervisor Taylor had asked apparently to be able to have some time on it. And then it might be handy to get the report here, which actually was very detailed. I appreciated that. But maybe the next thing we need is the action plan on the steps that need to be taken to make sure this doesn't happen again. Because this is a serious issue. You end up with people not being able to vote. That's a problem. So we have to make sure that we get to the root cause, what this was, and then what we're going to do different next time to prevent it from happening.
Okay, I'm finished.
Yes.
Let me just give you a word of encouragement that if you're successful in your quest, one of the first things that you can do, that's light a fire under GAB, but I digress. Supervisor Broderick.
Thank you. Do I understand correctly that the original vendor that this experienced printer of 20 years, was that ESNS?
No, that's the Mayor Group.
Right. Well, I have a question. Essentially, for car counsel, and it's really a long-term view kind of question, given the fact that this, it seems that perhaps one of the reasons underlying this is private sector business competition and competitors trying to corrupt one another's ability to perform. I mean, that's what I'm hearing. And that's not an allegation, that's just what I'm hearing. What recourse, Mr. Green, would we have under a case like that? It seems to me this bears certainly investigation, and is there a violation of law if there's a potential corruption of the election process?
Boy, I didn't see that one coming, eh? I'm buying you some time, man. That's my attorney, Green. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, some questions. More than one question there. I think these are for Jim. What are you going to do going forward? The answer to that question is, and I haven't seen these contracts, so I don't know what they say. Typically, our contracts have termination clauses, usually 30-day termination clauses. Now is not your time to terminate a contract, less than a month from the election, but you do have the right to terminate both of our contracts at any time and rebid. So, for the future, you could always do that if you're dissatisfied with any vendor, including the ESNS. Retroactively, as what happened in the past, again, it's going to depend on what the contract says. If we can show that they failed to perform as they were required to in the contract, obviously there's always a breach of contract action. I just don't know enough. I know no more about this than what I've heard today, so I would need to look at that. But that's a theoretical possibility. Well, I was just wondering if it was able to be demonstrated, proven, that there was an intentional ability or even negligence that resulted in the corruption of an election process and the loss of the franchise for a number of people, does that in any way violate federal law? I mean, are there grounds to investigate this matter and make a determination based on that investigation, and that would be the product of some law that potentially might have been broken, to find out, to go much, much deeper and find out what actually occurred here. And what I couch this by saying this is a long-term kind of question, and there's no impact on coming elections, but I think it would guide our legislative behavior in the future.
So let me, Supervisor, I'm assuming that's some kind of request. I know that the matter is going to come before us again because we would like to have the clerks here. So did you want to add on to that motion?
Well, I'm not too sure it's a motion without knowing whether or not a federal law was violated or a state law was violated. And that's the legal guidance I would need before I'd be able to proceed.
Well, I think
it's a request.
I think it's fair to ask Corporation Counsel that in the interim before our next meeting to look into that matter. So if you wanted to make
that would be just a, we'll make it a formal request.
Okay.
That you do so. Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry. Yes, Supervisor Elizabeth.
If you would, you know, one speaker.
Oh. Good. All right. Come on. And your name, sir, and we'll have you fill out a card. So, and nice to have you. You've sat patiently throughout this meeting, and I hope we impress the heck out of you.
Hi. Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Russell Van Gomp. I'm the village manager for the Village of Brown Deer, and I also wear the hat as municipal clerk.
Okay.
I've been doing it.
You're not at that convention.
No, it's a district meeting, I guess, so I have other duties to attend to.
Very good.
But I've been the village manager for 14 years and the village clerk, and we've dealt with elections, and I think there's two real big issues. You know, we're talking about the printing, and I work with the election commission, and so I don't want to disenfranchise the commission or to speak ill of the commission. But Supervisor Jerzyk talked about, you know, the commission serving the other 18 communities of Milwaukee County, and I think that is probably the bigger issue that needs to be addressed at some point. The fact of the matter is, we did not get our absentee ballots at all. We had to hand out paper ballots, and that caused us to remake about 300 ballots for our community on election night, which added to our cost because our election workers had to stay later that evening to complete that process. So, you know, the printing is one side of things, but I think long-term is the interaction of the election commission with the suburban communities, and I think that should be addressed.
Well, outstanding point. We are going to bring this matter back. And, Mr. Van Gompel, is there like a president of the Milwaukee County Clerks?
Yeah, there is. There's a Metropolitan Milwaukee Metropolitan Clerks Association that has members and officers.
We would like to invite them to our next meeting, and maybe if that doesn't meet, could contact myself or Jennifer Collins. We can make sure that those items get addressed so that when they're here, we're ready to answer them.
Great. I think that would be really appreciated.
So thank you, Mr. Van Gompel, for coming.
Okay.
Okay. Anybody else? Madam Clerk, I know there's been a lot, so why don't I ask you if you've picked it up? Otherwise, we can kind of fill in the holes.
I have this. It was informational. The item is informational only. There was a motion by Sanfilippo to lay over. I have Supervisor Sanfilippo requesting an action plan and what we will do different next time from the Election Commission. And then I also have Supervisor Broderick requesting if any federal or state laws were violated, and that should come from Corporation Counsel.
And that we should be prepared to meet with all of the municipal clerks and address their concerns at our next meeting. Okay, is that fair as far as what our understanding is? Okay, anybody else? Lisa?
Pat, Supervisor Jurczyk, I'm sorry.
I just think we do need to explore the whole issue of procurement. And this, I believe it's a new thing, correct me if I'm wrong, with the county now working with the city collection commission to a printing. And I think that may have caused a lot of the issues. Am I correct on that, Lisa? Is that
I'm not clear what you're asking.
When you went out with the RFP, it was not just the county election commission, it was the city of Milwaukee election doing a joint RFP, which is one of the things County Exec lately has been pushing. So this whole procurement process, I think, was based on some of that. I'd like to hear more about that.
Okay. I just want to clarify that the County Election Commission is responsible for procuring ballots for 19 municipalities, including the City of Milwaukee. City of Milwaukee is not involved whatsoever in bidding for the ballots or anything like that. Just in this particular situation in April, Sue Edmond made the decision to contact the Merrick Group to print her ballots when she found out that hers were defective. Otherwise, our office is responsible.
So maybe we could just get a little better understanding between the procurement and the election commission. I don't think the report's addressed that.
Yeah.
Supervisor Harris, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to add as a committee member to have procurement at this meeting as well. So I think they should be at the table to discuss their part in this debacle.
Okay. Mr. Van Goppel, you can tell everybody that we will have this item first on the agenda, okay, so that we can deal with it, and then you all can get back to your respective areas. And I apologize. I didn't realize you were in our audience there, so thank you. Okay. Okay. So we have a motion to lay over with all of those items. So, Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
Supervisor Harris?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Weishan?
Aye.
Roderick?
Aye.
Sanfilippo?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
7 ayes, 0 noes.
Mr. Chairman? Meeting for the next meeting at which procurement and association members would be present would be the next cycle as opposed to our special meeting. We have a special meeting.
Yes, I'm sorry. It will not be part of the special meeting.
It'll be next.
Yes,
next
and thank you, Supervisor Johnson. I apologize. We are meeting, and I apologize without getting into specifics. We're gonna meet on the 23rd on another matter that's timely. That in essence will not be our next meeting for the clerks. We'll deal with that at our June meeting. So,
thank you, sir,
and thank you, Supervisor Johnson. Let me just go out of order simply because I know we've had people that have waited forever, but Supervisor Lipscomb was, in essence, the author of genesis of item number 13, and I wanted to, while he was here, maybe take that up. I think that would be relatively quick, but that way Supervisor Lipscomb doesn't have to keep running back in and out. So, Madam Clerk.
Item number 13 from Corporation Council, a resolution to create a process by which resolutions, ordinances, or reports are formally referred to the Office of Corporation Council for legal opinion.
Attorney Brady, I don't know, it's a pretty comprehensive report. I don't know. Supervisor Lipscomb has had an opportunity to go through it. Supervisor Lipscomb, if you have any specific questions.
No, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the moving it up as well as taking it up again today. I appreciate the Corporation Council has been working to try to clarify this issue. I and others had some difficulty last term in sort of understanding our ability as individual supervisors to get legal opinion or consultation outside of the normal
outside of the formal committee referral or board referral process. So I appreciate the action to sort of memorialize the process and outline that firmly.
Very good. Okay. Any committee comments?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, ma'am.
I move to place on file for that.
Receive and place on file?
Thank you. Receive and place on file.
Because that means that all of our colleagues will get a copy of this in their board packet.
That is correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
Is that okay,
Wouldn't you adopt it? Yeah. If you adopted it, then it would go before the control board. If you receive a place on file, it's then it's treated as information.
Do we need to adopt?
It is the resolution.
Okay. So then, why don't I ask you to make a motion to approve?
I make the motion to approve this item. Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, any other comments, questions? Madam Clerk.
On the motion to approve, Supervisor Karras?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Weishaupt?
Aye.
Broderick?
Aye.
Sanfilippo?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
7 ayes, 0 noes, the item is approved.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, item number 9, please.
Item number 9 from the Office of the Sheriff, requesting that the Milwaukee County Board of Supervisors provide outside legal counsel at county expense to represent the Office of the Sheriff in all future legal matters.
Very good. Okay. We have Inspector Bailey joining us.
Mr. Chairman, I'll introduce the Attorney Jordan as well. Once again, thank you for allowing us to appear. I'm joined by Attorney Michael A.I. Whitcomb, W-H-I-T-C-O-M-B, from the law offices, Michael Whitcomb. Attorney Whitcomb has been representing the sheriff on a number of matters in 2012, which I'll make a reference to in my brief comments of introduction.
So we welcome Attorney Whitcomb.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Your background, my understanding, is you were in Henry Myers administration?
Started in the city attorney's office of Milwaukee for 8 years, and I supported the gentleman who hired me, Jim Brennan, who was defeated by Grant Langland, who's still in office.
Right.
And when he entered the office, came chilly to me. And so the mayor asked if I would serve as in his office, in his administration, which I did for his last term, for 4 years. I was initially liaison counsel to the common counsel, liaison officer to the common counsel, and then later chief of staff to his office.
So was it your idea to create Summerfest?
So certainly supported it.
We welcome you. I don't know, Supervisor Weishaupt, can we hear their
yes.
comments and then we'll go to you. Okay, Inspector, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate your comments. And I also appreciate the indulgence of the chair to allow Attorney Whitcomb to join me for my comments. I know that it's exceptional, and I think it gets to the heart of why we're here today. I think this issue will certainly challenge this committee because it concerns issues of law, authority, the way this county does business. It is certainly challenging. I will try to, in brief comments, allow the court to understand, I believe, on behalf of the sheriff, why we're here, and then certainly consider questions. In subsequent to the processing of the 2012 budget, so we'll wind the clock back to November, challenging budget, and a budget that resulted in layoffs of deputy sheriffs for the first time, which brings us into 2012. The sheriff makes a determination to order deputies who have received layoff notices to continue to report back to the workplace through his authority as sheriff, and that occurs in January of 2012. In 2011, we had the settlement of a collective bargaining agreement between the deputy sheriffs and Milwaukee County. Layoff notices subsequently go out. The sheriff orders them to continue back to the workplace, and we have the filing of a temporary restraining order by Corporation Counsel's office against the sheriff. And in the filing of that order, we have a number of allegations, including an allegation that the sheriff, in taking his action, was conducting a criminal act. that crime specifically being the crime of misconduct in public office, and that any members of the sheriff's office, in particular the human resources member of the sheriff's office, was being party to that criminal action of crime and misconduct in public office. We then have a ruling. The matter comes before Judge Carroll, and we have a ruling in Judge Carroll's court disqualifying Corporation Counsel from continuing in the case. I have a copy of the order of disqualification. It's not my intention to spend my valuable time here with you today reading legal matters, but we have a disqualification upon motion of the defendant to disqualify the office of Milwaukee County Corporation Counsel to represent Milwaukee County in the above-entitled action. The court having heard argument of counsel, the office of Milwaukee County Corporation Counsel be and hereby is disqualified from representing Milwaukee County in the above-entitled action, that action being 12-CV-350. And that is the genesis for the ongoing, permanent fracturing of the legal relationship. We're not talking about a personal relationship or people being friends. The legal relationship between the sheriff's office and the office of corporation counsel. And that continues today. We've had several subsequent cases in Milwaukee County. We have the layoff of two captains and the certiorari review of that subsequent civil service ruling, that matter before Judge Seifert. We have the bailiff injunction that's before Judge Amato. So we have a number of ongoing cases that are going to continue through in 2012, 13, and beyond, in which the sheriff, because of the permanent fracturing of the relationship between his office and corporation counsel, has been forced to appear with outside counsel, oftentimes Attorney Wickham. And on some of those matters, Attorney Wickham has been allowed in by the trial judge. In some matters, the trial judge has held his participation in abeyance and said that he will rule once it appears to him that there is an ongoing conflict of interest. Really, what we come down to, and you have it in my request that was first sent to Supervisor Holloway, subsequently to Chairman Holloway, and subsequently to Chairman Chairwoman Dmitrievich, the legal standards for the relationship between lawyers and clients. And I don't want to try to speak about that. I'm not a lawyer. But it outlines why this relationship is permanently broken. In the past, the sheriff's office has enjoyed representation in some matters from different law firms. We've been represented in the past by Lindner and Marsak. We're currently being represented in several matters by White, Hirschbeck, and Dudick. Clearly, the county board and corporation counsel have the ability to appoint outside counsel to represent county officers. I expect that the county corporation counsel's office's opinion will be that they are the legal representation of the sheriff in all matters in which he's named as the sheriff. I would suggest that in issues in which the sheriff's constitutional authority is at issue, in issues in which the sheriff is named as a party, he enjoys the same level of protection under law that any member of this state enjoys, which is to an attorney essentially of his choosing. There are constructs for that. I know we're talking about issues, but essentially in America you enjoy the right of an attorney in your choosing, especially in a case in which a attorney that you previously had dealings with has been disqualified for a violation of that relationship. I will finish my comments by saying this. Our opinion, in a layman's term, is that Corporation Counsel's office is a law firm. Ms. Walker, Milwaukee County Corporation Counsel, is the head of that firm. I've heard it asserted previously, as I've discussed this issue over the last few months, that the sheriff would only be precluded in dealings which include her as the attorney in court representing Milwaukee County. That's not the sheriff's opinion at all. The sheriff is dealing with Corporation Counsel's office. The attorneys that work on her staff. She's the head of that law firm. And the sheriff's viewpoint is legally his relationship with that law firm is fractured. And it is fractured not of his making, but of the actions made by that firm in conducting themselves in case 350. I'll be happy to answer any questions. I'm sure that there's a lot to talk.
Attorney Wickham, anything to add? I know that was pretty comprehensive, but thought I'd give you the opportunity.
Thank you, Your Honor. I welcome the opportunity to be here, and thank you very much for that opportunity.
I'm here to answer questions of a legal nature because I suspect that Corporation Counsel might be presenting opinions or comments of a legal nature in opposition to the request of the sheriff in this particular motion. Quite simply, an attorney-client relationship is a principal-agent relationship. The principal is the client. The agent is the lawyer. The attorney-client relationship is of the highest order of a principal-agent relationship. It demands utmost loyalty, it demands utmost honesty, and it demands trust. That relationship was destroyed by the agent, in this case, Corporation Counsel, by suing her principal, the office's principal, the sheriff. That irretrievably, irrevocably destroyed that relationship. Until that time, or until the passage of time, the principal, meaning the sheriff, is comfortable and consents to the continued representation. Comments have been made, and even comments by a judge indicating, well, Corporation Counsel is not here today. Deputy Corporation Counsel Grady is, and he's competent counsel, and he can represent the county's or the sheriff's interest in this particular matter. I don't dispute that, nor the competence of Deputy Counsel Grady. We've worked quite well together in opposing the forces that take issue with the sheriff's office. However, under the Code of Ethics, the disqualification of one attorney in a firm is imputed to the entire firm. And so it is not a sense of ethically that a lawyer in a law firm, even though that lawyer was not specifically involved in creating the disqualification conflict, that disqualification is imputed to the entire firm. It's for that reason that the sizable firms in this town have lawyers, staffs of lawyers, that their entire job, their sole job, is doing conflict checks for that firm. Because if one attorney in a 100-man firm has a conflict with a new client, that would disqualify the entire firm. Also, in the state of Wisconsin, we're one of five states in this country, whereby we have a Wisconsin constitutional provision that states every person of this state is entitled to the lawyer of their choice. The language is from the 1880s, but that is what is entitled to the that is the way it has been interpreted and was recently reaffirmed by an opinion by the Chief Justice not less than a year ago. And the assertion by the office, as I understand it, is that there is not that absolute necessity of a comfort zone of loyalty, trust, and confidentiality that must be the glue of the relationship of an attorney and a client. And even though the state statutes imposes a duty upon a corporation counsel to represent the various officers of a county, it certainly does not impose a duty upon those officers of the county to be represented by corporation counsel. If there's any questions, I'm quite general in nature. This is a highly developed area of the law, disqualification of attorneys for conflicts. And if there's any questions, I try to put it in the simplest of terms, not because you're not capable of understanding the specifics, but just generally making it understandable from the standpoint of the sheriff's office as to why it is not obligated to assent to the representation of corporation counsel, the entire office, against his will, if you will. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Attorney Whitcomb. And before we get into Supervisors' Comments Committee, members' comments, questions, I'm going to give Corporation Counsel an opportunity to make any point that you feel you'd like. And I look to both of our counsel in from that shop. And you have the opportunity. If not, we'll go to questions.
May I just make one more point?
Okay, yes.
Pardon the interruption. It's not in the position of the sheriff or the office that this is an absolute irretrievable relationship between the office of the sheriff and corporation counsel. There just has not been an opportunity to have a informal discussion with the sheriff, with corporation counsel, with Deputy Grady, perhaps my office, to see if this matter of future representation can be resolved to the comfort of the offices, and that if it involves economics, then have the matter brought before this board or the county board for approval of it. It's just that things have moved so fast with so many actions in so short a period of time. Really, neither Corporation Counsel, Deputy Corporation Counsel Grady, the sheriff, or my office really had an opportunity to take a breath. And that's just because of the half a dozen very contentious actions that have been brought against the county and the sheriff's office over the last 3 or 4 months that we've been doing together our best to defend the sheriff's office and the county, and we just have not yet been able to say that while going forward, how are we going to operate, and if we need a definitive decision by the board, if there is not an agreement or an understanding, then let's frame the issue or the question for the board, brief the board as to the underpinnings legally of both positions, and then the board would make its decision. But so I don't want to have this committee left with the impression that the relationship is irretrievable.
Well, Attorney Whitcomb, thank you for those comments, and thank you for opening that door, because I, for one, will walk through it, and I will invite any of my colleagues. I will be more than happy to see if we can mediate some kind of agreement, because obviously everyone has incredibly things to do as far as and something like this, we need to see if we can work past it. So I appreciate that, and I will take the onus upon myself, and I will encourage and invite any of my colleagues to join me. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Corp Counsel, I'm going to give you one chance if you'd like to say anything.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Kimberly Walker, Corporation Counsel. I'll be very brief. I think what Attorney Whitcomb said is correct, and in as much as Corporation Counsel's office is appointed by statute, any ability to change our position of providing advice and guidance to various department heads, elected officials, and the like would require a change in the law. That's the first thing. Secondly, I would say that the case that they referenced in which the Office of Corporation Counsel was ultimately disqualified because of the judge's belief that there was a conflict of interest, for which my office still doesn't believe that exists. Nevertheless, that was the judge's order. Inasmuch as there was that ruling, that case has been resolved. So whatever conflict would have existed at the time has subsequently been resolved with that case resolution. Prior to and since the filing of that particular action, members of the Office of Corporation Counsel have provided advice and guidance to the Sheriff's Department in numerous actions. And so, you know, we are charged and are ready and willing to continue to do what we had done in the past. In regard to the informal request, you know, to sit down and have a discussion around this, you know, I feel compelled just to say, because, you know, it's always brought back to that particular matter, that there have been numerous requests made to the sheriff's office, specifically to the sheriff, directly from me, to sit down and talk about this matter, and those requests continue to, up to this day, to be ignored. So while I'm open to sitting down and talking, I want to make sure that I level set the board, the committee, with regard to, you know, we are and have continued to try to communicate and just have been unsuccessful. With that, I will look to Deputy Corp Counsel Mark Grady and ask if he wants to fill any of the information that I've discussed.
Well, first of all, thanks, Ms. Walker.
Yes. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Mr. Grady.
I understand that the sheriff is disappointed that he had to get sued to have the layoffs take place. And obviously that was something the office didn't like. I agree with you. that it's not, this is not a question of disqualification of Kimberly Walker. It's a question of disqualification of the office. However, I do agree with Ms. Walker that conflict of interest in the system existed for the length of that case and no longer. Once that case is done, we continue to represent the sheriff in every other matter. We could cross the board. We have represented the sheriff since then. I have provided advice to the sheriff on his constitutional authority on a matter that's in fact on your agenda yet to come. It was alluded to the case involving the privatization of funeral services. I represented the sheriff in front of Judge Amato in that case. Judge Amato declined so far to allow the right to appear in that case. I don't believe that anyone, including the sheriff, was dissatisfied with my representation in that case. So I don't think it's a question of whether our office is capable of doing the job. I would say that I don't believe this board has the authority to do what the sheriff does. Because of what Ms. Walker indicated, the statute says corporation counsel is the counsel of the county. With the exception of individual cases where there's a requirement for outside counsel. It is true that the sheriff has representation from outside counsel in other cases for private law firm. Those are outside counsel selected by our insurance company, Wisconsin County Mutual, to represent them in those cases. At our request, generally because they're cases that are going to involve resources greater than use of police library that happens. So it's a specialized area that we think better something outside the tree. Just two more quick comments. On that point, what the statute provides, the analogy for me, Mr. Whitcomb, Mr. Bailey, were correct. This is what we think is the law. The analogy is the Attorney General of the City Attorney's Office. We're not elected like those individuals, like those voters, but the analogy is the same. The state government, the governor down to every bureaucrat in the state government is represented by the Attorney General's office. They don't have a choice about that. Constitutional permission, Mr. Whitcomb referred to or not. This is not the sheriff's personal business. He has the right to the sheriff's counsel. It's personal business. In his official capacity as a county elected officer, it's the same as you guys. It's the same as everybody else in this county. Corporation counsel is designated by statute to represent him. The same is true of the governor. A governor can have an elected, a Republican governor can have an elected Democratic Attorney General, so he doesn't get to say I'm not used to it. He has to. Same as the same. It's a different relationship than a normal attorney-client relationship being a public attorney. Our representations of the county as a unit, within that, of course, we have to represent individual officers, but our loyalty goes to the organization of Milwaukee County as a corporate entity. So, move to that, and then the other point is just to emphasize this conflict of interest notion. You'll recall there was a lawsuit in 2009, or related to the furlough days in 2009. County executive had a lawyer, county board had a lawyer, there were lawyers, everybody was lawyered up.
Right.
There were conflicts of interest across the board about what authority each entity had. Corporation counsel had obviously a conflict of interest in that case. It could represent everybody, executive of the interest. But that doesn't mean that once that case ends, corporation counsel can't represent the board anymore, can't represent the executive board. We're forever conflicted and representing you for the rest of the time. The same is true of the sheriff's office. There was a conflict for that case. Because that case is over, that conflict only extends to the case. It doesn't extend for all time to affect the sheriff's office. One last point, and that's we ever get to the fiscal level. We strongly disagree with the costs that are embedded in this resolution.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. McGrady. And I would be most happy now to hear from the members of this committee. Let me just preface my remarks by saying that we have been offered an opportunity to maybe mediate. So I know where some of the discussion is going, and I guess I just want to plant that seed because we need to be productive. So, Supervisor Weschel.
Hi. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm glad Mr. Grady made that point, and Ms. Walker about it, because I think this is really pretty simple, and that is when you work for the people, you get the people's lawyer. It's as simple as that. And things are, you know, relegated to, you know, this is not personal issues. We've all asked, and in fact, that's why we had to create a system to get the core council's opinion and formatting how we interact with core council. And so I think it's pretty clear that if there's a legal issue in the sheriff's department or any other county department, it's core council's office that handles it. And when it's the people's signature on the check that pays the lawyer, you know, the people get to decide who that lawyer is, and it's clear that it's core council. So I would hope that we wouldn't spend a whole lot of time on this, because unfortunately, even though that there are comments that this isn't about personalities, unfortunately it is. And right now I would like to move denial of the item, and to say that it's not our job to mediate personalities. And in fact, if there is an issue, I would hope that those professionals involved would find it amongst themselves in a professional manner to sit down and iron out those differences. Because I'm not going to appropriate hundreds of thousands of dollars because some people can't get along. And it's not my job to police the schoolyard either. So the motion is to deny, and I would hope that we wouldn't spend much more time on this item. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Weishaupt. If I could ask you to hold off on the motion, we've got four other supervisors that would like to comment, and I would rather that we have them have an opportunity to speak on anything versus what you just made the motion on. So if that's okay with you, to allow our colleagues to, because then they would only have to speak on, you know, on denial, and I guess...
Okay, that would be fine.
Thank you. Thank you. Supervisor Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was going to move to receive and place on file, because having heard Ms. Walker and Mr. Grady, I believe that since there was a resolution in Judge Carroll's court regarding the matter that was before her, that it's time to move on. But nevertheless, that's what I was going to say. But Supervisor Weishaupt has suggested
That's appropriate.
Okay, then. Supervisor Johnson, if I could ask you to hold off on that, I have other supervisors that they can don't necessarily want to have to comment on this one. Thanks. Okay, Supervisor Schmidt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think you jumped the gun a little bit, rightly so, on especially in light of the conversation or the Environmental Inspector Bailey said as much as Attorney Whitcomb to ask that. It's not what I read in this resolution. This resolution we're talking about that the relationship between Sheriff Clark and the Office Clerk is irrevocably broken, both ethically and legally. Request county board provide outside legal counsel at county expense. So that's a little departure from what this resolution actually says. And yeah, I'm certainly of another strong opinion that, you know, when I saw this, I said, well, can't we mediate this? This is a radical step in, and the statute can't do on the statute. I would agree with that. You know, it's a different thing, personal and corporate. There is corporate responsibility. Every department head has to go this way. And, you know, I would be hopeful, too, and I hope there's some arbitration here, I think we can vote on it, is that, you know, if corporation counsel is, they've come to us with requests before, and we need to fill a position. I know we're in transition. I know we've had a lot of difficult matters, but what else is new? We get to do every day. And the office of the sheriff is in an embryo position there. I'm sure, you know, that it's a position where we're going to be sued constantly. There's constitutional matter, people, you know, stuff we went through a little bit today. So I understand all that. But the fact that mention was made that, you know, it's not irrevocably broken, that we need to talk about this, and that's not in the resolution, goes to show that this has gone too far too fast. I know there's frustrations, but my Lord, these frustrations have to be worked out. And if there's a new sheriff, you know, make this decision, which we can't make, also that, you know, no longer the corporation. And then every department has the choice of whether they use corporation counsel or not. And that doesn't work. Okay? The other point I was trying to make, going back, is that if we feel that the corporation counsel has come to this tool previous, before, and I'm sure now, if they feel they don't have the expertise or the time to do something, they can always come to us, and we can, you know, we've gone to outside counsel on a number of occasions because of maybe not expertise in the area, but this is the area they're supposed to have some expertise. They're representing Milwaukee County. They should be, they're familiar with the statutes, et cetera. So, you know, I think I'm saying the same thing most people are saying here. Maybe not that other people can speak. But certainly this is a situation where I don't think we have any legality to vote on this. And secondly, that this certainly cries out, whether it's been done or not, personalities, I mean, my Lord, and this is something very important. Corporation Council is going to be intricately involved in decisions we're going to have for the years. The sheriff certainly understands that in the office. And, you know, this doesn't work, you come back and say it's irrevocably broken because of all these kinds of, just one case we're talking about seems to be the genesis of it. Now, if it's more than that, continues to be, well, maybe that's something we can discuss, but it should be done between the parties before it comes to this kind of conclusion. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor. Supervisor Harris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to make a few comments, and I think that Supervisor Wyshon stated it best. I mean, how is it that, you know, the sheriff think that, you know, he can just take public dollars and decide that he wants to get his own lawyer to represent a situation that is clearly has been resolved at this point. And so this $300,000 that is estimated for the cost of a contract, of an annual contract, is unrealistic. We don't know how much employee fees are going to cost. In fact, I believe we're probably being charged right now because Mr. Wickham is here. So we need to consider all those factors, and I actually would support a denial. I was going to move for a layover, but as far as I'm concerned, this isn't something that we should even be mediating this or determining at this level. It should be something that could be mediated in a different kind of way.
Supervisor Broder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was listening closely when Inspector Beaming was making the sheriff's case here. And he talked about Judge Carroll's ruling in terms of that intent of action. And that was singular, and I agree with court counsel that that expired, that ruling with that case when it was disposed of. Any allegation of permanent fracture, I think, is a contention on the sheriff's part, and certainly not something that should in any sense inhibit ongoing discussion. And if it ultimately does result in a clash of those arguments, that's something to be resolved, I would guess, in a court of law, not before this kind of body. So ultimately, and I heard the sheriff's comfort referred to a number of times, our responsibility is with taxpayers' comfort. And I think this can only be seen as a major irritant to taxpayer comfort. It seems unnecessary and unduly costly, and I can't follow the arguments that have been made through that looking glass. I really can't.
Thank you, Supervisor. Okay, I look to either Supervisor Wyshon or Supervisor Johnson. Now would be the appropriate time, unless there's someone else. Well, Attorney Grady.
There was a discussion of a motion received, placed on file. This is not an informational item.
Okay.
So the action item probably should still be either tabled or laid over or denied or approved, whatever.
Okay. Okay. So.
Then, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make the motion to approve.
To deny. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, can I be heard as to that motion, or would you prefer me to remain?
Absolutely.
We have the issue of whether or not it can be, whether or not this action can be done in statute. Whether or not that, if that exists in law. Again, I don't want to bore you with the statute. Obviously, you can do so on your own. 59.42 is the statute that exists that creates Corporation Counsel's Office. Sub 1 gives them tremendous power to prosecute and defend all actions in which the county or any board, commission, committee, or officer is interested or a party by virtue of their office. That's fairly absolute. Sub 3, however, a little more on point for our purposes. In addition to employing a corporation counsel, a board shall designate an attorney to perform the duties of corporation counsel as the need arises. The sheriff's position is the need has arisen. Corporation counsel made the statement that in case 350, it must not have been pleasant for the sheriff to have been sued. And that is true. It was not pleasant for the sheriff to be sued. This is not about the reality of the sheriff being sued. It was how that suit was offered. In our opinion, Corporation Counsel had an obligation. If they wished to represent other elements of Milwaukee County government, they should have noticed the sheriff that they believed a conflict and asked for him to waive. Actually, I believe that they should have told whoever else in county government asked them to sue the sheriff that they could not represent that party because they had an obligation to represent the sheriff, their prior relationship. So this isn't about the reality of the lawsuit. It was how the lawsuit came about. That is where the fracture in the relationship exists, not the reality of a suit. The sheriff has been in many suits. This is about tax dollars. We are asking you to move tax dollars. We do not do so lightly. Taxpayers of this county have had no greater friend withholding tax dollars dear to his heart than the sheriff over the last decade in saving this county tens of millions of dollars. Thank you.
Okay. There's no further questions. Madam Clerk, the motion is to deny the tax. Supervisor Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to say that the action emanated from the County Executive's office. So, with respect to what Corporation Counsel is to do, it relates to the statutes. And because it was perceived at some point that there would be a conflict of interest, that something else occurred as it related to representation. So, I am going to vote for to deny, only in a sense that from what I heard this morning, both Corporation Counsel and Deputy Corporation Counsel have indicated that the matter is done and we can move on. So if the sheriff would like to do something else, he can present what he wants to present to us, and then we'll deliberate and go forward. So, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, very well. Okay, on the motion.
Well, just want to clarify a factual matter. There is, as was alluded to earlier, there are still cases currently. One case from Hummer where Judge Seifert has allowed Attorney Wickham to appear for the sheriff on the basis that there's alleged conflict of interest between our office and the sheriff. We disagree with that, but we have done 100%. So my only point is, on a case-by-case basis, it's always important for the judge to make that call. And put this in the monitor that call. We don't believe as a policy that going forward for purpose.
Okay. If there's nothing further, then Madam Clerk, on denial, please.
Supervisors Harris?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Weisham?
Aye.
Broderick?
Aye.
Sanfilippo?
No.
Mr. Chair?
No.
5 ayes, 2 noes.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. It is noon, and I know we've had people in our audience that have been with us since 9 o'clock. I want to look to our staff. Okay, let me check with staff here to see if they would like to have a break, or should we keep going? Keep going? Okay, we're going to keep going then. Thank you. All right. Madam Clerk, item number 10.
Item number 10 from the Office of the Sheriff, requesting authorization to execute a professional service contract with CenturyLink Correctional Communication Services for the provision of inmate phone service at the county correctional facility. On February 2nd, 2012, this item was referred by the board.
Good. And we don't have that. A new cast of characters from the Sheriff's Department. Very good. I'll let you all introduce yourselves.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. If I may add two congratulations on your appointment to this.
Well, it might be condolences the way it's going.
As you see fit, sir. To my right is Deborah Burmeister, who is very familiar with this particular contract, and of course John Preby, our fiscal administrator.
Very good. Thank you. Okay, I guess, Inspector, maybe item has been before this committee last term. There were some issues that And I know that staff analyst Jennifer Collins has worked behind the scenes. There was reports that were part of everybody's packet. I will ask anybody if you have specific questions on the motion for our guests here.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I just have a question about the expenditures, or I guess revenue and net costs. I got kind of, I'm not sure how this works out. It sounds like we're going to have like a surplus, well, we're going to gain revenue by $210,000, and that's for the revenue, but then a net cost is $210,000. So I'm kind of confused about what is that, what does that mean? Because there's a negative $210,000, so I don't know if that's, I don't explain it to me, what does that mean? Are we paying for this, or are we getting a, you know, gaining a revenue?
The contract will result in surplus revenue of $210,000 above what's in the budget,
mm-hmm.
and therefore the tax levy cost for the sheriff will be down.
Decreased by
$210,000.
Okay.
That was trying to indicate.
Gotcha. All right. That answers my question. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? Supervisor Schmidt.
Thank you. Quick question, Mr. Chairman. This was the best bid, obviously, that is through the report as soon as I started to see. But is it that the commission rates other vendors were higher than 67.9, when it used to be 51.3, but in the history of that, that unusual, to say the least, or obviously must be the parameters these days, and that's the best bid including the 67.9 commission. That's a good question.
Yep.
Chairman and supervisors, through the RFP process, this contract came up approximately 5 or 6 years ago. That was the best commission rate at that time. Through the RFP process, we found out there's better technology out there. Items are a lot less expensive. Technology is less expensive. So that's why we were offered a higher commission rate. We're also not doing a lot of stuff on site like we used to do on site, so they were able to offer us a higher commission rate.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, yes.
Okay, so that's just thank you. Any other comments, questions by committee? Yes. Okay. Motion for approval has been made. Madam Clerk.
Supervisors Harris.
Aye.
Schmidt.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Weishaw.
Aye.
Broderick.
Aye.
Sanfilippo.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye.
7 ayes, 0 noes. The item is approved. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Okay. Madam Clerk, we'll go to item number 12, please.
Item number 12 from the Director, Department of Health and Human Services, submitting an informational report providing an update on the study group activities regarding the possible transfer of management of inmate mental health and health care services to DHHS. This item is also before the Committee on Health and Human Needs. The item is informational only unless otherwise directed by the committee.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. We have before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair Bukowski, and also congratulations on your assignment.
Maybe we kiss the baby, but we'll see.
Supervisor Nakia Harris as well for your recent appointment. Members of the board, we really look forward to working with you. Just give you a brief overview of the report. The department has been working very closely with the Sheriff's Office, Department of Administration, the County Board staff over the last several months. We've been meeting per the plan that we put forth in our January report. The process has been very collaborative, and our meetings have also been very productive. We've been going through a process of discovery and due diligence, including the review of data, staffing patterns, and also accreditation standards. The data indicated that there's nearly 33,000 inmates screened at booking, half of which have a medical or a mental health need. We took in-depth tours of both the downtown facility and the south side facilities. That was a very productive meeting there. We also researched several counties that Dr. Shansky, the medical monitor, told us to look into. They include Dallas County, King County and San Francisco counties, and all of those counties had the transition from inmate medical within their respective sheriff's departments going into health departments. One common characteristic among the three counties and distinct from Milwaukee County is that they had a real well-developed medical and health services. Our research also indicated a few common themes. One was that most of them added resources when the health department took over the inmate medical units. Two, there was really a positive, collaborative, collegial relationship between the sheriff and the health departments that was really necessary to have a successful transition. And three, it must be recognized that the two departments have different philosophies and missions. The medical department is dedicated to caring for patients, while the sheriff's office is dedicated to managing prisoners. So that mutual respect of those different philosophies is really important to help us move forward. Earlier on, the sheriff's office indicated that they were going to issue out an RFP. They have since told us that they're not going to do that, not interested in pursuing that. Some administrative and fiscal management issues arose at our last meeting, which include human resource, contracts, equipment, the potential need for additional positions, and also unfunded positions. Currently, the division administrator position is unfunded, so we're making sure we work with DAS to ensure that that position is funded when the full transition were to take place. The timeline of having the goal, as outlined by the county board, of July 1 to have us take over remains the goal. However, some additional time might be needed to complete the following few things here. And these were all discussed with Dr. Shansky and are in your report. There's a fourth additional thing Dr. Shansky asked us to consider, so I'll mention that here as well. But the recruitment and filling of the leadership positions is critical. In particular, the division administrator position, Paula Lucy has put together a job description, and we're working with the sheriff's office on this. We want to really work together with them and to try to fill this position as quickly as possible. Two, we want to meet with the sheriff's office and DAS to discuss a plan for transition of the administrative functions, and the plans must address current as well as future resource and budget needs, and obviously there needs to be agreement between us before full transition were to take place. A memorandum of agreement needs to be in place to avoid any miscommunication, and Dr. Shansky has provided us with an example of a memorandum of agreement, and we're going to be working on a draft, and we'll be speaking with the sheriff's office on that at our next meeting. And lastly, what Dr. Shansky wanted us to look into was the Department of Corrections has a great psychology model and how they treat prisoners with mental illness. He wanted us to take a look at that model and possibly incorporate elements of that you know, when we transition and take over the inmate medical. So that's just a brief summary of the report, and we'll be here if you have any questions.
A young lady next to you.
Paul Lucy, Director of Behavioral Health Division. I have no additional comments. I want to say we've been working carefully together to. I think that the biggest opportunity that we've all agreed that we'll see is some improvement and some different relationship between behavioral health and inmate health, and that it is a huge issue in the sheriff's jail, people with mental illness, and we see many people sort of cycling between us, and that offers a very good opportunity to try and resolve some of those issues.
Paul, the other key player in this, the sheriff's department, anything to add, Inspector Schmidt?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, you're fine. Again, Hector Colon and Paul have been very responsive. Many, many people have been at their massive table that they have at their headquarters. So there's been a lot of engagement and collaboration on this. We still have a ways to go. We're looking forward to the final product. We're certainly not there yet, but certainly progress will be worth it.
Thank you. Okay, again, good segue. What kind of timeline deadlines are we looking at?
Again, July 1 remains the goal. We just really need to get these few things in place. In all likelihood, it might require, you know, some additional months. But we want to meet with the sheriff and go over these things and finish it for it, if possible.
It's a pleasure, sir.
Thank you. It's always verb, you see additional time and months, but this is a major, major issue. We have Christensen lawsuit. I remember going over the budgets the last couple of years, and the sheriff particularly, you know, when we questioned on major budgets. That, you know, I like to stay out of this health business. It's a term. It's not in his perfect condition. I mean, there is a question you have for safety of the patients. You have to keep patients, I'm sorry, people come. But maybe that's not a too strong word. I mean, the statistics we look at, I mean, you gave the statistics in this one, and I've seen them other places too. Half the people incarcerated almost have some kind of issues, shall we say. A lot of those are mental issues. Drugs are an outlet of that, of course. So, other areas, we see so many things that Milwaukee kind of say we're not going to copy everything, but other municipalities have gone farther. They recognize that this is not the expertise of our safety people, our sheriffs and stuff. These are, you know, special situations where we have mental health in this county. We've been moving to try to keep people out of our jails of this. And the other things we talked about that they add and other things. Okay, so what I'm saying is that this is a major shift in budget stuff too. I mean, certainly for so many. And on the mental health facility, we've been through that in the last year, and we realize that, you know, monies aren't easy to save. The devil's in the details. You have just described to us that you need some responsible expertise in this area we don't presently have, in positions of some note and some expense. So, you know, I'm not as concerned as getting answers a lot. Fortunately, you know how the county executive's budget works. They have to work in the summer to figure these things out. I mean, you're being told in your departments right now, I'm sure, that come August, you better tell us how you cut money and, you know, efficiency is going to be zero again. Okay. So, yeah, okay. That's going to be interesting. And my point being, as going ahead, as we're going to have to look at, is that Mr. Mansky back there, comptroller, that we're going to need some. We're going to need some real math going on here to how these budgets are going to be able to work with the necessary need to do it, that we can be shift costs or, you know, I just won't get into this department, you know, charging each other kind of stuff again, because that's always been the need. Transfers are crazy. Let's get a real budget with honest numbers, what it really costs to do these kinds of things, and how are we going to do that? We need to work with the county executive and so on. And I'm not trying to tell you what to do, but what I am saying is I know how these things work a little bit. And this is a major shift. Now, I don't think we could expect the answers coming to mind. But, I mean, the budget's come to us. By the time the budget's come to us, this could be solved, or else, you know, I don't know how we vote on this. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm glad.
Ms. Lucy.
Mr. Francis, you make an excellent point. And I've said to others, and I would be glad, Dr. Colon, and I'd be glad to meet with anyone individually about this if they'd like some additional information. But I've said publicly there is no money at BHD for this. As anybody that's been on the Finance Committee knows, BHD has never been flush. So with the meetings with DAS and sort of thinking through how we can budget that money appropriately is very important.
Any other committee members? If not, let me apologize to both of you. I know that you've endured this entire meeting before your item came. Well, that's nice to hear, but we'll try to put this closer earlier in the agenda so it'll make it more fair. Obviously, we're sensitive to people's times, and so I know that it's been 3.5 hours, so thank you for your patience.
Thank you.
Okay, what's the committee's pleasure on this item?
It was informational.
It's informational, right, so we'll leave as is then? Okay, thank you. Okay. Let me look to the committee. It's brand new for me, but the rest of the items, I'll plan on the very last one, deals with litigation. Now, you have items 14 through 18 that are less than $10,000. We obviously have the option of going into closed session if you'd like. And so whatever the pleasure of the committee is, we can go into closed session for whichever items you'd like. Or if you're opting out of going out of closed session, we have our players here in the big ticket items. So let me look to the committee to see what your pleasure is. Supervisor Broderick.
Mr. Chairman, I would hope we take items 14 through 18 inclusively as one.
Attorney Brady.
I have to take request to take item 14 separately because we revised the dollar amount downward, actually. I've got a handout just to the files. So we need separate action on that one.
So we'll make it 15 through 18.
So we'll take. So the bottom line is that we're not going into closed session unless. If so, I'm going to ask the clerk to read item number 14. Okay, and we're going to have separate action on item 18. So, Madam Clerk, let's read 14. We'll take that up, and we'll do 15 through 17 per Supervisor Broderick, and then we'll do number 18.
Item number 14, Corporation Counsel requesting authorization to settle a claim filed by Lynn Merrick Secura not to exceed the amount of $914.34 for damages to her vehicle.
And so as Attorney Grady said, there's a change in the figure, right?
Correct. Chairman, Supervisors, all that has happened is that when the claim was originally filed, it was filed by Ms. Merrick. Since then, her insurance company has paid hers, and now the claim is by the insurance company. They managed to put the repair bill down $100, so now what you have and revised memo is a claim for $914.34 in insurance.
Okay, thank you. So, it's been motion to debate. By Supervisor Broderick. There's no comments, Madam Clerk.
Supervisors Harris?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Weishaupt?
Aye.
Broderick?
Aye.
Sanfilippo?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
7 ayes, 0 noes. The item is approved.
Madam Clerk, if I could ask you to read items 15, 16, and 17 at least into the record so that if anybody's listening, they can at least know what we're going to take up as a package.
Item number 15 from Corporation Counsel requesting authorization to settle a claim filed by Christine Johnson not to exceed the amount of $2,200 for damages to her vehicle. Item number 16 from Corporation Counsel requesting authorization to settle a claim filed by Gary Wojnowski not to exceed the amount of $1,218.62 for damages to his vehicle. Item number 17 from Corporation Counsel requesting authorization to settle a claim filed by Tom Matthews not to exceed the amount of $1,213.34 for damages to his vehicle.
Okay. Any comments, questions? Thank you, Supervisor Broderick, for approval on that package. If there's no comments, questions, short speeches, we'll ask the clerk to call the roll.
Supervisors Harris?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Weishaupt?
Aye.
Broderick?
Aye.
Sanfilippo?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
7 ayes, 0 noes. Items are approved.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Could you read number 18 for us, please?
Item number 18 from Corporation Counsel recommending payment in the amount of $600 in forfeitures and $6,921.80 in attorney fees and costs to the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty in settlement of State of Wisconsin ex rel Rice versus Milwaukee County Board of Supervisors, case number 11CV009399.
Comments, questions? Attorney Williams is going to join us, but Supervisor Sanfilippo, please.
I just have one question. The letter indicates that the county is going to pay the $600 in the fine that was levied. But is that consistent with state statute? My understanding of the state statute in 1996 is that when these fines are levied, they have to be paid by the individuals who are found to be guilty of committing infraction, and it specifically states the culprit first. And I do have a copy of people who think that's great. But I just don't think that the county can pay that $600.
Okay, well, let me put to Council Attorney Williams, please.
Sure. It was our understanding that the county would pay Mr. Grady. The attorney's fees, although it's a larger amount, were actually easier to deal with. Mr. Grady and I have been talking about this for the past few months, and the sticking point for us had been the forfeiture amount.
Did that answer your question?
No. I don't think the county can legally pay the $600. I think it has to be paid by the board, each individual member, and it specifically says the salary first.
Chairman.
Okay, Attorney Greedy.
My, Mr. Williams, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that the court's order was directed to the forfeiture was against the county board. It was not against individual supervisors. And so I think you're correct. A different example of a supervisor's example. If a court found that Chairman Murkowski violated the open meetings law and found it levied a forfeiture against Chairman Murkowski, this might apply, but the forfeiture of the court levied was against the county board of supervisors as a whole. It didn't name individual supervisors. So I think we're okay, but I will confess I have not put this before this moment.
I'd like the folks to just maybe play this thing over and give them time to take a look. There's an attorney general in there that I found in a transcript. I just think I want us to get into something that, again, is improper. My understanding of it, I'm not an attorney, is that the decision is correct.
Okay, Supervisor Weishaupt and then Johnson.
Thank you, sir. Would it be appropriate that we approve it and then by board day we can get some kind of legal opinion? And then if it's not the appropriate, we can then lay it over on court.
Is that okay with you?
Sorry, Jerry was talking to me.
Supervisor Weishaupt made the motion that new supervisor Stephen Whitmore was going to pay the entire bill.
No, they didn't.
Thank you.
Of course,
you
didn't.
To move approval today, and then if court counsel could get us, you know, the appropriate legal side of it done by the county board day, and if everything's fine, we approve it on board day. If not, we return it to committee to have it dealt with there.
Yeah, you know, I'll withdraw my motion and we'll support that.
Okay. So you'll ask for a report by board day. Okay. Supervisor Johnson?
Mr. Chairman, I move approval.
Thank you.
Number 18, item 18.
Very good.
And I'll also say that tomorrow morning, tomorrow's Friday, that we members of Wisconsin County Mutual Insurance Corporation's Claims Advisory Committee will take a look at the attorney's fees.
Very good. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for your service.
Okay.
How long have you been doing that?
Since 2006.
Oh. Thank you. Okay, so if you guys can work behind the scenes and have that report. So.
Yes.
Cool. All right. If there's no further action, then the motion to approve has been made by Supervisor Johnson, Madam Clerk.
Supervisors Harris.
Aye.
Schmidt.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Weishaupt.
Aye.
Roderick.
Aye.
Sanfilippo.
No.
Mr. Chair.
Aye.
Six ayes, one no.
Okay, thank you. Let me look to the committee again. Items 19 through 21 are in essence are big ticket items over $10,000. I look to all of you for guidance if you want to go into closed session on any of the items.
Could I ask this question? These are all recommended settlements by court counsel.
What I'd like to do then is take items 19 and 20 together in the session.
And so, are you moving approval?
Yes, move approval.
Okay, so I'm going to have the clerk read items 19 and 20, please.
Item number 19 from Corporation Counsel recommending payment in the amount of $35,000 to the law offices of Mark A. Sweet for attorney fees incurred in the Miles and Vika layoff and recall litigation, case number 11 CV 015472. Item number 20 from Corporation Counsel recommending payment in the amount of $27,500 to McGillis Weimer LLC for attorney's fees incurred on behalf of Roy M. Felber, MDSA, and Philip Winslow in settlement of Roy M. Felber, etc. all versus Milwaukee County, etc. all, case number 11CV1296.
And let the record reflect that for item 20, Attorney Zillig is in our audience, and she, it is her opinion that is part of our packet. And I don't know if we need to have you come forward. Are there any questions? We have a motion for approval on both 19 and 20. And thank you for being here. And if there's no questions, then Madam Clerk, please call roll on items 19 and 20.
Supervisor Harris?
Aye.
Schmidt? Johnson?
Aye.
Weishaupt?
Aye.
Broderick?
Aye.
Sanfilippo?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
7 ayes, 0 noes.
Supervisor Harris?
I would like to make a motion to go into closed session. The committee may adjourn into closed session under the provision of Wisconsin Statute Section 19.851G for the purpose of the committee receiving oral or written advice for legal counsel concerning strategy to be adopted with respect to pending or possible litigation with regard to the following matters. At the conclusion of the closed session, the committee may reconvene in open session to take whatever actions it may deem necessary.
Thank you. On the motion for to go into closed session, Madam Clerk. Call the roll, please.
Supervisors Harris?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Weishaupt?
Aye.
Broderick?
Aye.
Sanfilippo? I'm sorry, Supervisor, what was your vote?
I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
7 ayes, 0 noes.
Okay, I will let staff do their...
I move that we
okay. I'm sorry. Madam Clerk, please do a roll call to clear up quorum.
Supervisors Harris?
Aye.
Am I here?
Schmidt?
Here.
Johnson?
Here.
Weishaupt?
Here.
Broderick?
Here.
Sanfilippo?
Here.
Mr. Chair?
Here. Supervisor Harris?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm
number 21, yes.
And I move that we go back into open session.
Thank you. Well,
I'm supposed to make a motion.
No.
Oh, very good. You're done.
Roll call,
yeah.
Okay, then I am mistaken once again. I gave
her We're learning together.
I learned my mistake. Okay, sorry about that. So, we have before us, Madam Clerk, item 21. Could you read that again for those that are listening?
Item number 21, Corporation Counsel requesting authorization to file an appeal in the matter of Milwaukee County versus Wisconsin Employment Relations Commission and American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, case number 11-CV-12137.
Thank you. Okay, committee's pleasure. I'm going to look to Supervisor Broderick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move layover.
Okay, motion is to layover. Any comments, questions? If not, Madam Clerk, please call a roll on layover.
Supervisors Harris?
No.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Johnson?
No.
Weishan?
Aye.
Broderick?
Aye.
Sanfilippo?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
5 ayes, 2 noes.
Our next meeting is going to be Wednesday, May 23rd, and I apologize once again for the special meeting. Without getting into specifics, but it's something that we're all trying to learn together on. But then our next meeting as a committee is June 14th. And so at this time, if there's no further business, I say we are adjourned, and thank you all for your time.
Mr. Chairman,
yeah.
For as many meetings of the 5 years, I would be told a great job. Great job.
Wow. Well, very cool.